or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at one, it's Richard Spur, but next here on LBC, it's Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. A packed programme tonight. We'll be talking about millionaires who decamp to tax havens as the boxer Tyson Fury leaves for the Isle of Man. Will we have to stop singing some Christmas songs due to Labour's employment law, as the Telegraph has claimed? We'll talk about whether fox hunting is still going on despite being against the law, and about the perils of running a pub. We'll check in with our US correspondent and talk about being blocked on social media. But first, Labour claims that the average earner is £500 better off since they came to power. Are we feeling it yet? That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. The U.S. Coast Guard is pursuing another sanctioned oil tanker this evening as Washington intensifies pressure on the Venezuelan government. It's already seized two similar vessels in the last fortnight. Donald Trump has demanded the Caribbean nation returns assets it seized from U.S. oil companies in the 1970s. The former U.S. diplomat Brett Bruin has been telling LBC the U.S. president may want regime change in Caracas, but so do many of the locals.
I served at the U.S. embassy in Venezuela. I think it's fair to say that most Venezuelans are tired of Chavismo or tired of Nicolas Maduro. It has brought about poverty and suffering. I mean, you have a whole generation of Venezuelans that have had to flee the country, including here to the United States.
President Trump's envoy says he's been holding productive and constructive talks with representatives from Ukraine and Europe on ending the war with Russia. Steve Witkoff says peace must be not only a cessation of hostilities after the meetings in Florida. The chair of the Labour Party has told LBC she's confident Sir Keir Starmer will still be the Prime Minister next Christmas. But Anna Turley has also acknowledged a lot of difficult decisions did have to be made to stabilise the economy. The Labour commentator Paul Richards has been talking to LBC.
My counsel to Labour MPs, who are all plotting like crazy right now, is that you have to be ever so careful what you wish for, because whichever camp you happen to be in, your chances are you're not going to get the candidate you want anyway, even if a Labour leadership contest was triggered.
Israel has approved 19 new settlements in the occupied West Bank. Far-right ministers have said the move is to help block the establishment of a Palestinian state. Police patrols are being increased in North Belfast after shots were fired at property there. They were heard last night after reports of a gun being fired in a different road in the same area on Friday. And forecasters say Christmas Day will be chilly, but the vast majority of the country won't see any snow. But they do say the best place for a festive flurry will be the south coast of England, where there is just a chance of a white Christmas. LBC weather, cloudy and mild for much of the UK overnight. Rain will push into northern and western areas. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. The Labour Party are claiming that since they came to power in July last year, the average worker has had a real terms pay boost of over £500 per annum. The average UK wage now stands at just over £38,000, they say. But do you feel that there's more money in your pocket? Are you getting more at the supermarket as you used to? Retail sales are expected to fall this Christmas. So to find out what's going on, let's speak to Will Hutton. He is an economist and columnist with The Observer and joins us on the line now. Hello, Will.
Hi, good evening.
You've perhaps read this press release from Labour, which has outlined some of the things I've just mentioned. On a communications level, this is more like it from Labour, isn't it? They have been shy in boasting of their successes, which has given all the ground to their competing parties and the right-wing press.
Well, when I read it, I'm glad you said that, because when I read it, I thought this is surprisingly professional, but maybe it's just me. But now there's a second pair of eyes on it. But look, I mean, you know, they set out their stall, and actually, I mean, it's hard to fault the numbers. I mean, whether people actually listening to this program this evening feel it is another matter. But it's true that the, you know, wages are going up by close to 5%. The inflation rate's fallen to 3.2%. You then put those numbers into, you know, you can multiply the weekly kind of pay by 52. You get what they get. This is around 38,000 a year. That's a lot of money actually for the average wage in this country. I didn't think it was that high, but there we go. And we know that prices are going up by the figure I've just quoted, and you get what you get, which is allegedly. I mean, actually, it's true. The mathematics demonstrate that actually people on average are £500 better off per year in December 2025 than they were in December 24. So there you go.
Yes, but the maths is debatable, isn't it?
Because it is and it isn't. I mean, you know, the Office of National Statistics has delivered the numbers. They've kind of multiplied it out. I thought I'd just, before I came on that, I thought I'd just do the mathematics myself. And it works, you know. I mean, it's not, you know, that is the maths.
Well, yes, but there's, you know, statistics and damn lies and all of that. I was surprised, as well as you were, that the average wage now stands at £38,000. So I looked at that, and average can be worked out three ways. I think what they've done is they add up added up all of the wages in the country, divided it by the number of workers, and come to £38,404, which seems high. Now, if you take the mode average, which is the most commonly earned amount, it's 23,000. That sounds more correct, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a long tail of people who make much less than £38,000 a year. So the mode, and then you can get to the median, which will be between, I think it's around 29, actually. But yeah, so they've got, I mean, the average is much higher, pulled up by the fact there's a lot of higher earners. So you again have made accurate statistics on air at LBC. So, you know, God knows what your listeners are going to make of it. But
it's a first and a last, no doubt, from me. Now, this is good news, but how much of this wage increase, and it is in real terms, can actually be down to Labour policy?
As I speak in December, brutally a bit, but not that much. I mean, the average earnings are in the private sector are the result of bargains struck willingly between employers and employees. I think that there's been a degree to which employers have been willing to concede quite good pay increases to their staff because the labour market has been tight. But, of course, that's not the case now with unemployment topping 5%. So, I mean, that goes on kind of independently, really, whoever's in power. The inflation rate, that is the mandate of the Bank of England, which is independent from the government, and they've set interest rates to slow the economy down, reflected in those unemployment numbers, which has reduced the rate of inflation. And so much of the rate of inflation is actually, you know, I mean, all governments play this game. When the inflation rate goes up, they say it's kind of international forces, you know, the Ukraine war, world commodity prices, et cetera, et cetera. When the inflation rate goes down, they say, aren't we brilliant? But there's, on the other hand, you know, the exchange rate hasn't gone over, has stayed steady. They've managed to raise taxes to keep the bond markets kind of calm so that long-term interest rates haven't gone up. And indeed, you know, that's reflected in mortgage rates. You know, I can get fixed-term mortgage at 3.5% for 5 years, which is extraordinary. So some credit, but not as much as in this press release, in fairness.
Yes, I mean, people talk about inflation as though a lower rate of inflation is actually going to make goods cheaper. But, of course, the opposite is true. It's just going to go up less quickly than it used to. Do you think that people actually get that?
I mean, I don't know about your, what you did at university or what your journalistic background is, but, you know, I mean, absolutely. I mean, and I don't know how many people listening are kind of, and I won't use that phrase again, are kind of sharing your kind of view. But of course, the whole point is, you know, prices go up by kind of 3.2% on a year ago. They've still gone up by 3.2%. And then that itself is an average, so that some prices within that have actually stayed the same. Another prices, rents, energy prices have gone up by more than that. And of course, it depends upon, you know, the character of the house you live in, the character of your spending, whether or not you are experiencing the average inflation rate or a higher one. So yeah, absolutely. It's just moderating the rate at which prices go up. It's not price stability.
Yes. In answer to your questions, by the way, I'm not a journalist. I'm a talk show host. And at university, I did psychology, which is to say nothing.
Well, there you are. I mean, you know, you know the answers to the questions you're bowling me, you know. And I think there is a recognition amongst, most people who kind of read the papers and kind of organize their household finances that actually, you know, when the inflation rate goes down, to the 3.2% we're now talking about, it's not exactly, it's better news than it going up to 4%, but it doesn't mean that, you know, prices aren't rising. They certainly are rising. And actually, I find, like many people, the cost of living kind of astonishing, you know, how much it costs for a pint of bitter or, you know, it's just astonishing, actually. I mean, I met someone the other day who was kind of boasting that he went into a pub and a pint of bitter was £4, you know, and you thought, how so, you know? And wherever you go, people are recognizing that actually, you know, whether it's, you know, buying a sandwich, buying a coffee, kind of the rudimentary things of life. Although, again, in this press release, which caught my eye, which I thought was, in a sense, quite clever of Labour to package it together. I mean, the cost of living measures that the Chancellor took in the budget, no cut through whatsoever. I mean, hardly anybody knew about it. But putting it together in that press release, you know, the freeze of rail fares. So that's the thing, the first 30-year freeze in rail fares. You know, the reduction in electricity bills by £150, and so on. You know, it was actually, cumulatively, that's not trivial. And it may be that in 2026 that actually there'll be a bit of growth in the economy and people will start to feel, you know, a bit more money in their pockets. I mean, I hope so. I don't want to be pessimistic.
Yes. Do you think that it's a bit like climbing out of a well? The inflation is down. We've had 6 interest rate cuts since the Labour was elected. People are earning more, but they're not feeling it. Is it a bit like climbing out of a well in which you can only really see the light when you're at the top of it?
there's again a truth in that. I mean, it obviously these numbers are, you know, months old. But it wouldn't surprise me if in 2026, people, certainly in the spring, people don't start to feel when some of these things really come through in the beginning of the new financial year, when they're time to, for example, the big increase in people's pensions for those of us who are pensioner age, you know, that's going to go up by 4.8%. That's a big increase for most pensioners. And those kinds of things there will be, I think, a bit of a feel good, more of a feel good sense around, actually. And it was interesting. My eye was caught by kind of one newspaper report saying this was the biggest, busiest Christmas getaway kind of on record. And that we're currently living through, whether it be by rail or by train or whatever, that ferries, you know, everything is extraordinarily crowded and fully booked. And certainly, you know, going to a movie or going to the theatre, you feel that actually, you know, people are out and about more than they were. So maybe, you know, we're at the beginnings of. I noticed that one index of consumer confidence has actually really gone up for December. And that's an interesting kind of, and that's a lead indicator of where people are at. So kind of maybe things are going to kind of, start getting better, and maybe, some of the kind of, you know, kind of easy hits that Reform and Nigel Farage have had, will become kind of less easy to make.
Yes. I mean, despite the difficulty that Labour have had in sort of cutting through, because almost the entire edifice of the media is against them and has been throwing a fit ever since their favourite party lost the last election. Are they in a position where they're going to have to sort of do a Donald Trump and go around the established media and speak more directly to the people?
Well, I mean, that's what there's a lot of kind of complaint this week, wasn't there, with the not having two press conferences with lobby journalists, and instead having one kind of in the morning and in the afternoon talking to influencers and content generators and people in social media, because, you know, that's how you get your arguments out. That's where most people, increasingly large numbers of people, consume their, or get their access to news, and actually the slant on the news. So, I mean, I think they are getting wise, and the social media operation in Labour is getting better. And this press release was itself, I think, indicative of that. I mean, it could hardly have been worse. I mean, the last 18 months have been, you can be an independent onlooker, or you can be a Labour MP or a Labour activist. It's not exactly been, there's been not much to write home about. But,
How much do you think that is a function of the kind of depressing message that had come out of Number 10 ever since they won the election? There were difficult decisions and, you know, things are tough and just constantly negative.
Look, I mean, that's my view. I mean, my view is that they wanted to reproduce what George Osborne had done in 2010. Won an election, hit the country with austerity, and actually blamed Labour for it, and it stuck. And they wanted to kind of have their revenge on the Conservative Party. They need to have the revenge on the Conservative Party. I mean, the Conservative Party's vote was the lowest for 200 years, and they only had 125 MPs in the House of Commons. I mean, the Tories were kind of really, the electorate had made up their mind about the Conservative Party. What the country wanted was actually, yes, we know it's, you know, things aren't great, but give us grounds for hope, you know, give us grounds for optimism. We know there's going to be some tough things to be done, but, you know, tell us in words and in a language and a story that actually is plausible and foundational, that actually we've got grounds to believe that actually 25 and 26 are going to be better than 2024. And instead of which, they went for the winter fuel allowance and cutting that back, and they went for kind of ill-judged welfare reform. And before you knew where you were, you know, and they're having a budget where you necessarily had to take £40 billion out of the economy, but doing it in the way they did it, the increase on national insurance contributions on employers, meant the business community kind of were after you, and small increases actually on inheritance tax on farmers, and you get to this time last year, and actually they only won 34.8% of the popular vote in July 2024. It was hardly a ringing endorsement, and they were on the slide, and once you're on the slide, it's extremely difficult in any political system, any democratic political system, to turn that round. You have to do something very decisive to turn it round.
Do you think that they are capable of doing that? Because, I mean, reform, it's possible that they peaked too early, and the more people get introduced to their performance at local council level, the more they might rethink their options. The Tories don't really have anybody likeable to present to the public. Maybe Labour can pull off a renaissance. What do you think?
Look, I think it's possible. I think Labour MPs themselves are kind of wondering. If you speak to the bulk of the Labour Party after the election, after the budget, I beg your pardon, on November the 26th, I think that there was a few days where I think there was a consensus settled that actually there had to be a leadership challenge, that actually Keir Starmer couldn't cut it. He can't tell a story. He's not quick on his feet. All those things. You've interviewed people over the, you know, the story. Mm. I think now, there's a sense that actually, hold on a minute. I mean, cumulatively, the government has done some quite good things. The employment rights bill is going to be very good, I think, for a lot of workers in 26 and 27. And similarly on rents, There's some good things on cost of living, as this press release, the occasion for this discussion we're having. You know, it could be that actually people start thinking, well, he's not so bad, old Starmer.
grudging acceptance. Will, very good to talk to you.
And he's also...
Go on.
He's done... And the other thing I think that people... I mean, I hesitate on this because I'm not... But I do think... the British really get it about the danger of Putin. And I think one of Starmer's achievements is actually he's played his part in keeping the kind of the US engaged with and Trump engaged with Europe. He's played his part in holding NATO together. He's played his part in being alongside the Germans and the French kind of trying to kind of ensure that the Ukrainians don't have to, you know, have a peace in which they cede chunks of the Donbass to Putin. It isn't front of mind, you know, when you're standing in the queue at kind of Tesco, and it's not front of mind at a petrol station, you know, or in day-to-day life. But it's kind of background, and you do kind of know that, you know, on this, Starmer has played a difficult hand well. And I think grudgingly there'll be an acceptance that's part of a picture of maybe things gradually improving in 26. So it's not impossible that Starmer could still be here in 12 months' time. That wouldn't have been said, I don't think, even 4 weeks ago.
Very good to talk to you, Will. Thanks very much for that. That's Will Hutton, the economist and columnist with The Observer. Will Hutton. Now I'm going to take a short break, and what are your thoughts on this? The Labour Party say that we are, the average person is £500 a year better off, which is, it's a small amount over the year, but if it were lying on the pavement, you would not walk by it, you'd pick it up, right? So it's not an insignificant amount, but are you feeling that things are perhaps turning a corner and getting better? 0345-6060-973-LBC.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They come here because they know it's a soft touch.
Straight to the point.
How does this even add up?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
This is a Whitehall farce without any doubt.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico. Or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives. Or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
The Big Tasty is back at McDonald's. But now, it's a double. It's the beefiest Big Tasty of all time ever. Oh, got a bit intense there. The new Double Big Tasty, now at McDonald's. Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
0345 6060973. The Labour Party have put out a press release. They say that analysis has revealed that the average worker in Britain is earning £500 more per year since the Labour Party won last year's general election. And that £500 is in real terms, meaning the average worker is earning this much more even after inflation. And they say demonstrates that the Labour government's plan to put more money back in working people's pockets is working. But it's going to take a while to feel that that is true, isn't it? Because the message that has come not just from their traditional enemies in the right-wing press and increasingly on social media is that things are terrible and they're getting worse. But the opposite is actually true. Things are getting better, but it's going to take a long time to feel that that is true. And I wonder if this is being timed perfectly, because the next few months everybody's going to be drawing in or battening down the hatches, literally and figuratively, because, you know, people don't tend to want to go out much at the beginning of the year. But come spring, maybe we'll all start to really feel it then. 0345 6060 973. South Kensington. Hello, Leonard.
Good evening, Nick. I think it's a really quite pitiful amount, especially when you compare it with what they give themselves each year with regards to their rises in their salaries, which, as far as I'm concerned, they don't particularly earn. So I think it's just a little carrot dangling on a stick. But I really don't think it's going to make that much difference for a great many people. I mean, it's really, per annum, quite pitiful.
Well, yes, but the opposite, when they were supposedly taking away not even quite that amount from people with from the winter fuel allowance, the fury you could hear from the International Space Station, it was so loud. So on the one hand, it's a life-changing amount, and on the other, it's an insignificant one.
Well, life-changing for a very short amount of time, I would say. You're quite right. You wouldn't walk past it if you saw it on the pavement. In fact, I think I did find about 300 quid on the pavement.
Oh, that's mine.
Many years ago.
I think you'll find that's mine, Leonard. I can describe it to you if you like.
No, it's not a lie. I absolutely did. I don't know why.
No, I didn't say it was a lie. I said it was mine.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I couldn't hear you properly. Right. But, I mean, I don't know. I think it's really... You're quite right when you said it seems to come at us, you know, a particular moment in time where, yeah, it's a little trick they pulled out of the hat, but I don't really think it's going to, I can't see Starmer being in power in a year's time, let's put it that way.
Well, he'll probably be in power in a year's time. It's whether they have a chance of winning the next election that's the thing, and it's a long way off. And I think one of the major problems that they've faced is their inability to communicate what it is that they're doing in ways that people understand. Now, there's some people who are particularly good at communication, and they are currently riding high in the polls. There's a chap whose popularity seemed virtually indestructible, and he was of a similar bent. I'm thinking of Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson in that order. But... Keir Starmer is not one of those people, and I think perhaps it's that we got used to being subject to experts in communication, people who would get to the front of the stage and metaphorically wave their arms about and attract attention. Now, Starmer's not like that, and I think perhaps one of the major problems that they faced on becoming the government is that they seemed unprepared to communicate with us. And what little did come out was all negative. So no wonder we felt as though things were bad, is because the government itself was telling us that things were bad. But they may be changing things for the better, because this press release, and I don't know really how much the right-wing dominated press are going to go with this. They could just completely ignore it, of course. But at least it's a move in the right direction. I mean, they're talking about they've frozen rail fares for the first time in 30 years. They cut £150 off average energy bills and £300 for the most vulnerable. They're rolling out free breakfast clubs in 2,000 more primary schools, expanding free school meals to about 500,000 children. They're extending the provision of 30 hours of free childcare, which is worth up to £7,500 a year. They're delivering on the promise to pensioners through the triple lock, meaning an almost £2,000 boost over the course of the Parliament. They're increasing the national living wage, giving full-time workers £900 more a year. I could go on. But these are probably things that you haven't heard about. And I think the fault is not with you, it's with them for not communicating these things well. Chelmsford, hello, Raj.
Hi there, Nick. How are you going?
Good, thanks.
Good. I've sent a few messages in over the time, but this is my first call, so please be gentle on me.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So what I'm calling about is the conversation you guys were just having about the £500 average wage increase.
Mm.
And basically, I've got a background in sort of numbers and reporting, and I understand how numbers are very easily skewed.
Yes.
And how averages are very dangerous, because they're very easily skewed and skewed and misrepresented.
Yes.
So I'll give you an example. So with this case, if there was, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be wrong, but if there was two people in the world, one was a CEO on £100,000 a year, and one was a care worker on £18,000 a year, they would be £118,000 between the two of them. So it'd be about £59,000
right.
on average.
So the average between them would be £59,000, which is
pounds,
right.
Correct.
So I mean, my usual example is, excuse me, if a pub full of people in Wakefield and you determine the average wage in that pub, then it might be £23,000 a year. If, or the average wealth of the person in that pub, let's say £50,000. If Elon Musk walks in and you count him, suddenly the average wealth in that pub is at £100 billion each. Now, that doesn't really tell the true story. It's, that's a skew, as you said. But I did address that. £38,000 is the average if you take everybody's wage and, you add it up and divide it by the number of people that you're talking about. If you take the mode average, it's the most commonly earned amount, and that's about £23,000, which sounds more likely, doesn't it?
Yeah. So my point is that the wage has increased. It probably has, but it's probably not the people that need it the most that have felt the improvement.
Quite possibly. Yeah, that 500 might be the average increase for everybody, but of course, people in banking, in the C-suites, in the banking racket, will be earning considerably more than that. Thanks for that, Raj. Thank you for pointing that out. I'm going to take a short break, after which we're going to talk about millionaires, and we're talking about one of the patriotic millionaires, and we'll be discussing, specifically, the conversation will be about Tyson Fury, the boxer who has moved his £160 million fortune and family to the Isle of Man. We'll be talking about the flight of the rich and more of your calls on this subject after this news update with Tim Daly.
The U.S. Coast Guard is pursuing another sanctioned oil tanker this evening as Washington intensifies pressure on the Venezuelan government. It's already seized two similar vessels in the last fortnight. Collars for pets which give off electric shocks could be banned as part of a new government strategy targeting animal welfare. It's due to be announced tomorrow and includes a ban on trail hunting over fears that's being used as a cover for illegal fox hunting. And forecasters say Christmas Day will be chilly, but the vast majority of the country won't see any snow. They think the best place for a festive flurry will be the south coast of England, where there is just a chance of a white Christmas. LBC weather, cloudy and mild for much of the UK overnight, with rain pushing into northern and western areas. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Look, I've never told you this, but I've always looked up to you. In fact, I used to copy your style. You've always been the cool one. Not that I'd ever actually admit that to you. So this is my way of saying, I know you'd pick something way better than me.
Gift cards are available in-store until the 24th of December and online, even on Christmas Day, because sometimes the best gift is letting them choose. This Christmas, if you can't find the words, find the gift. John Lewis.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best winter holidays start with the right airline. Book your family trip to Winter Wonderland now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Tyson Fury is moving. The boxer has moved to the Crown Dependency of the Isle of Man. This is weeks after Rachel Reeves' budget. The boxer is understood to be living in an £8 million house just outside the island's capital. The Isle of Man, of course, known for its generous tax rates, income tax currently 21% compared to 40% higher rate in this country. And he is a man who is worth approximately £160 million, apparently. Julia Davis is co-founder of Patriotic Millionaires UK, a group of wealthy individuals calling for the tax burden to be directed more at the wealthy, and joins us on the phone now. Hello, Julia.
Hello.
So he's worth £160 million. He can afford to pay any tax. He became successful because of the things tax pays for, the NHS, the roads, schools, law and order, everything that people pay tax for. What do you make of people who benefit from others' taxes and then hightail it to avoid chipping in themselves?
Well, I think they need a Christmas message. And my Christmas message to Tyson and anybody else who's thinking of doing that is, if you know, like, contributing to our public services, which is what paying tax is something that you should be really proud to do. And that's what we're proud to do at Patriotic Millionaires. So I was in Morecambe last year, and I ran the park run there, and I thought it was such a lovely community. But there was clear, it was clear that they, you know, the town really needed some support and investment. And I was only there for a short amount of time, but it was clear how proud they were of Tyson. And so what I'd say to him and anyone else is support the town and the community that you grew up in when you're incredibly fortunate to have that kind of wealth, and be really proud about doing that, because, you know, for someone with that level of wealth, it would not make a jot of difference to pay tax at the rates that they are at the moment. And if he wanted to join us at Patriotic Millionaires, then he could join us in calling for a bit higher rates of tax on wealth, so that he could really support those that community he came from, and indeed communities throughout the UK who really need that now. So I was reading an article today about the rise in warm banks in the UK. So we already know that we've gone back, you know, in time almost, to this shameful position. You know, we don't have soup kitchens all over the place now. We have food banks, and we have food banks that are being relied upon by working people in the sixth wealthiest country in the world. And that doesn't have to be. You know, that's a political and a societal choice that's not necessary whatsoever. You know, and this increasingly extreme wealth inequality, which we are experiencing in the UK, is directly contributing to us to becoming a more polarised, you know, more divided society. And it doesn't have to be that way. So someone like Tyson, he engenders such pride in the community that he came from. And I would really hope that he, you know, he really relishes that pride and wants to take pride in really giving back, which, well, I hadn't understood that that's something that he's done. So I wonder whether or not this is all part of this whole, I don't know, this whole narrative that we've got, which treats paying less tax as just something that's kind of cool to do. And it's just something that you expect very wealthy people to do. But that's not the way that I see it. I just think that if you're in the incredibly fortunate position to have significant wealth like that, then you can live a fantastic life and just give a little bit back, which is, you know, tax is not something to be avoided. It's something to be proud of, just contributing to our society working well.
And it seems to me that the more people make, the less willing they are to give any of it up. They seem to be obsessed with making more and more. The richer you are, the more you seem to be consumed with adding to your wealth and not letting any of it slip through your fingers.
What always seems to get focused on is the amount of tax people pay when they've got wealth, rather than the amount of wealth that they have and amount of wealth that they retain after they pay tax. And of course, we've just had a budget where tax thresholds were frozen for another 3 years. And that's going to mean that the lowest paid workers in the UK are now going to be paying tax simply because of inflation. You know, and salaries sort of notionally going up, but in fact their income's not really increasing at all. And so what we're having is a situation where it's been decided politically and presumably in society that instead of slightly increasing taxation on people with the broadest shoulders, the people that we should be looking to contribute a bit more, we're going to just get more tax in from the very lowest paid in Britain. And that, to me, is just, that's shameful and completely unnecessary. And it's shameful that we have a situation now where we have people facing, you know, kids facing Christmas now, and their families are considering whether they can put the heating on or buy sufficient food for the family for the week. And then we have people who are so wealthy, you know, their most difficult decision is, you know, where do they go for their fourth holiday that year, or, you know, are they going to buy their third house or whatever? And they would rather be lowest paid in society, pay more tax than that they contribute at a very moderate rate, which would have no impact on their lifestyles whatsoever, and which they could do, and they could do with pride. You know, and I think that when you are wealthy, you get the greatest satisfaction from, you know, supporting people or achieving things for your community with your wealth. So as well as being a member of Patriotic Millionaires, myself and several others within our group, we try and use a lot of our money towards supporting community energy. So a fantastic thing that someone like Tyson, who comes from a community like Morecambe, could do is he could be helping put solar on houses in Morecambe so that people aren't then worrying about their fuel bills so much. That's something that we've been helping groups with in Grimsby and Barnsley, and that is so incredibly satisfying to see your money doing things like that. So I think that as a society, we need to stop treating this as okay and just going, oh, you know, that's what everyone does, that's what you expect wealthy people to do. Because the thing that I learned, because I haven't always had money, the thing I've learned through, you know, being very fortunate and selling my stake in a company I helped set up, and then having been very, very lucky to then have wealth to even talk about, is that there's nothing intrinsically different about you as a wealthy person that means that you have to not want to contribute to society. You know, you've been put in an incredibly fortunate position where you can live a fantastic life, and you can give something back. And that's what we should expect. That's really not a lot to expect from someone.
Well, it's interesting that you use the word luck, because by my estimation, almost everything in life is luck. You either do or do not have good luck in any circumstance. And luck is what makes people's fortunes. You know, they were born able-bodied, for a start. That's luck. They were born to parents who loved them, perhaps, or gave them the opportunity, or they went to a good school, etc. and so on. Rich people tend not to ascribe any of their fortune to luck. They say that they did it by working hard, as though they're the only people in the country that actually do that, or they have a special genius that got them that money. And it's just this sort of disconnect between the reality of their situation and then them sort of perceiving themselves, I don't know, almost apart from us, not godlike necessarily, although there does seem to be an element of that with some of them. But it's almost as though they think of themselves as a different species. They aren't subject to the same sort of societal requirements as the rest of us.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, yes, I worked hard. Yes, you know, like myself and my partner, we took risks. But whilst I worked really hard, I don't think I ever worked harder than a headmistress or a headmaster, coping with, you know, a school with all manner of challenges to face. I know I never worked harder than many, many of the people in the NHS. And dealing with the emotional strain that they have to deal with on a daily basis. So, yeah, there was times when, you know, we took, you know, really risky decisions. You know, we sold our house to set up the business, which then led to our wealth. But you know what? That involved luck, because we were able to buy our first house when we were able to buy it. Because I went to university at a time where I didn't incur any debt because I didn't have to pay any fees. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have parents who could, you know, help me out, so that between a bit of sort of financial support from the government, a bit of financial support from my family, not having to pay fees, I came out without student debt. So that's luck. It's luck that, you know, as you said, I had a very supportive family. So all of these things which enable you to then, you know, use your talents and use your energies to make money, that involves luck. And when we talk about wealthy people working hard, I think we just need to look at some people choose to dedicate their time and their energies to setting up a business and building wealth for themselves. Some people choose to dedicate their time and energies to working for charities where they're never going to become extremely wealthy. And like I said, you know, working within the NHS, working within schools, working within the care sector. So these are people that are working extremely hard and dealing with situations what many of us would find really difficult to deal with.
Do you think that we've been subject to a sort of an arms race of different countries who are offering the super rich the ability to pay less and less and less tax? Because it doesn't really matter what the percentage is. If somebody earned £10 million this year and income tax was only 10%, which would be a bargain, they're going to have to write a cheque for £1 million, and that's going to hurt. So it's not the percentage itself. It's this race to the bottom that is engaged with by different countries. And we are the preeminent problem, aren't we? The list of top tax havens are dominated by places flying the Union Jack from their government buildings.
Exactly. But do you know what? They've been around for a very long time. So this narrative that people are suddenly leaving the UK because, you know, that there's been some suggestion they might have to contribute a little bit more to our hospitals and our care services and our schools, and it doesn't stack up. There's always been very wealthy people who would rather do any, you know, move their families rather than contribute to making sure that other families that grew up in the same town as them, they can heat their homes, they can put food on the table, they can buy school shoes. There's always been some people who will do that, and there's been other people who don't. The people who've made money are happy to stay here and just feel very proud that they can contribute a bit more in the country that's enabled them to have their success. And you know, I don't think we should focus in on individuals, but what I would say is that, you know, when you have communities that feel so proud that, you know, somebody within their community has done well for themselves, and they're, you know, they're cheering you on and that kind of thing, and it would be great to support them and, you know, and just make sure that you're using some of your wealth to help those communities. And that shouldn't be on a voluntary basis, because we know that doesn't work. It needs to be being happy to just pay the tax, you know, as other people have to do, and being willing to sort of contribute a bit more because you can. And so many people that are having to contribute more now, they're really, really struggling. So let's look at what's happened, because, you know, very, very wealthy people have stamped their feet and said, oh, no, if you tax us a bit more, we're going to move. What's happened is decisions have been made which have, like I said, we've frozen tax thresholds. The lowest paid now are having to pay more in tax. But look at what we've done to small and medium-sized businesses by increasing employers' national insurance. So we already have a situation where, you know, our businesses on our high streets, you know, that's local families, they are struggling to compete with these massive corporations, the likes of Amazon, who, you know, structure their business affairs very, very well so that they don't have to pay very much tax. They're not contributing much to British society whatsoever. So this small to medium-sized business is already struggling to cope with, you know, business being sucked away by the likes of these mega corporations, and then we increase national insurance on them instead of asking the wealthiest in society to pay a bit more in tax. That is the direct result of being hesitant as a society to ask for what is absolutely reasonable from people who can afford to pay it.
Asking, though, is the problem, isn't it? Because they aren't going up. We can't ask. We're going to have to take. Because
exactly.
I looked it up. The Bloomberg have a billionaires index, and they chart how their wealth changes over a yearly and a daily basis. And on Friday, the five richest people in the world increased their wealth by £30,000 on one day.
Yep.
1% of the population on Earth own half of all global assets at the moment. Now, on that level of increase, that's going to get worse by the minute, and AI is going to turbocharge that problem. So asking is no good. What can we do to actually force them to pay?
No, you're so right, and that was the wrong use of terminology for me. But by ask, I mean require, and that's got to be taxed. So, you know, we've been campaigning really, really hard for, you know, simple changes in taxation. So a very moderate wealth tax on tax above £10 million, which, you know, if you've got wealth above £10 million, you can afford to pay that without, you know, even noticing it. And then just something that is just so basic, I can't believe we're still having to have this conversation, which is taxing income from wealth at the same rate that we tax income from work. There shouldn't be any difference between the two. The government tinkered with it, but it was pretty irrelevant. We should just say, no, that's it. If you get income from whatever source, you pay at the same rate. Because if you're incredibly, you've got to be pretty fortunate these days to have wealth that you're making an income from. And then you can absolutely afford to pay tax on that, just like people who have to go out to work. And particularly when we are requiring tax payments now from the lowest paid people in Britain who are already, you know, not able to cover their household bills with the money that they're getting when they go out to work, but they're having to rely on warm banks and food banks. So yeah, absolutely, we need fair taxation of wealth, and that's what Patriotic Millionaires is there absolutely to campaign for. And obviously, we can't do that alone. So we need the British people to say, no, we're not going to put up with this anymore. This isn't right. We don't have to do this. You know, we're a proud nation, and we believe that everybody in Britain should be proud to contribute to taking, you know, to making sure that we are not backsliding in what we are providing to the youngest and the oldest in society. Yeah, it should not be accepted that now public services only pay for the absolute essentials, and we're just going to let go things like libraries and public swimming pools and access to, you know, like sports centres, etc., for everyone. Everyone should be able to have access to that. We should have well-funded schools giving the best to our youngest, and we should have really good care services and health services for people, you know, all across the ages. And we shouldn't accept that that is going in the sixth wealthiest country in the world.
Good to talk to you, Julia. Thanks very much for that. Julia Davis, co-founder of Patriotic Millionaires UK, a group of wealthy individuals calling for the tax burden to be directed more at the wealthy. Now, I'm going to take a short break and then come back to talking about how life is for the rest of us and whether this £500 that Labour is trumpeting that more per year we earn as an average earner is actually going to make much difference in real terms, or is it actually the start of the dawn of a new day for the Labour Party? Finally, they appear to be communicating some of their successes to us. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's been a Hanukkah horror and one almost like any before. 15 partygoers murdered on a beach in Australia, and we heard from eyewitness Tommy.
It was literally just, it was like a carnage scene, everyone screaming.
Back on the home front, Greater Manchester Police Chief Constable Stephen Watson spelt out the impact for British Jews.
Group of 10-year-old girls wanting to go to a Hanukkah party where they should be, frankly, interested in balloons and bicycles are making a request for armed police officers.
Hanukkah is meant to be a celebration of light, but why is the outlook currently so dark for so many?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This Christmas at Tesco, 24 cans of Pepsi Max are just £6.75. That's down from £11.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores excludes Northern Ireland. Ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best skiing experiences start with the right airline. Book your winter holiday now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So there is a boost for working people, say the Labour Party. New analysis has revealed that the average worker in Britain is earning £500 more per year, that is in real terms, as in after inflation, than they were when Labour won the general election last year. it's something of a change for the Labour Party. They appear to be getting over their reluctance to boast. That's a thing that has not encumbered Nigel Farage or the Tory party, but it's probably one of the reasons that their message is found getting their message out so difficult. Coventry, hello Frieda.
Hello young man. My first point that I wanted to make, and may I make two other small ones? Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Right.
First of three.
First of three, the £500 business. Again, politicians get so used to just talking in numbers but never giving you detail. And I would like to know whether the people are netting 500 or if it's 500 including deductions. It's a detail, but it makes a difference because...
Well, I think in answer to that, I'm imagining that they mean £500 more before tax because that's how much people say that they're earning.
Yes, and that's my point, because then some people will look at their wage slips or whatever it is they get, and they'll think, oh, well, I've only got 350 or whatever it is.
Well, that's the nature of income tax.
Well, no, it's the nature of how you tell the story, because if they said, honestly, you're going to get 350, and people got 350...
Well, no, not really. If you go to an employer and they say, I'm going to give you £28,000 a year, you would not expect that to be after tax.
True. Yeah, again, it's so... Anyway, I just think it's slightly deceptive because it's not in your hand to spend. Right, so that was that point. And then the other two points I want... Oh, may I say congratulations to that lady, the patriotic millionaire?
Yes.
What a lovely attitude.
I know.
You know, as in...
Refreshing.
Well, and also, what a nice change. And then the other point I wanted to make, and you probably laugh at this... I think that the government ought to stop Amazon trading here unless they pay tax at a fair rate. And I think, given the levels of greed with these big boys, that they'd rather have the trade than go without it.
Well, quite possibly, yes. I can tell you how much the owner of Amazon made on Friday, if you like.
No, I'm not bothered, but because it'll be out of my league, it's
yes.
not going to affect me.
No,
but
quite.
You know, and I think that was all, really.
All right.
Oh, I know. There was one more small thing, if
yes.
I may. I did hear on the radio, there was an interesting observation about men and women voters. It was a documentary-type thing. And apparently, men mainly go to Farage, and women... go to the Greens in terms of voting.
Right. Well, that is as I would have expected. Thanks for that, Frieda. In case you are interested, by the way, Jeff Bezos made £4,500 million on Friday. Bracknell, perhaps? Ali?
Evening. My first point I wanted to make was actually from the last caller about how we should be asking our more wealthiest people to increase their taxes to contribute towards society. And I actually disagreed with that point because I feel like we should be asking, well, daring to ask the question more, what are the government spending our taxpaying money on? We can always increase, but is that always going to lead to some sort of benefit? And I don't necessarily think it will.
Well, it depends on what you value. Do you value the state pension? Do you value the NHS? Do you value the police, the courts? Do you value the fire service? Do you value libraries, the roads, the streetlights?
I value all of it, and I think they are all critical infrastructure that we need in the country.
Right.
And I think we have a luxury of having the NHS and those sort of things. But does necessarily increasing the tax for the wealthiest people in the country correlate to better services for the police, better services for the fire stations?
I don't think they necessarily do. Well, I think it necessarily does. So, we'll agree to disagree there.
Yeah, yeah.
But what was your other point?
The original question.
Yeah.
As a working everyday person, I earn around about £50,000 a year, or shy of that. And I would say I do feel that extra £500 in my pocket every year, or this year specifically. I think, and I said to, I think, a producer that the environment around us and the rising costs around us don't necessarily demonstrate to us that we actually are making a little bit of extra money than we did last year. And I think, like your previous caller said, whether it's before tax or after tax, it's always going to be after tax.
Yeah.
And I think you do see that slight increase, which might allow you, as an everyday working person, to say, oh, actually, I might get an extra takeaway this month, or right. I might go do an extra activity. So I do agree with that statement from the government, and I'm not the biggest Labour fan myself.
Okay, good talking to you, Ali. Thanks for that. Yeah, I think that part of the problem is that we get an idea, a sort of a template of what things cost. And this is a function of ageing, and people of a certain age will think that, well, I'm amazed at the price of a pint. You used to be able to get a three-piece suit and a holiday in Morecambe for threepence halfpenny. And that may be true, but that's ancient history. It's just that you get an idea of how much things cost at an early age. And things have gone up so very much lately that everything looks like it costs more, but that's just a function of time, apart from anything else. Thanks for all that. Plenty more opportunities to talk about this on LBC to come, but we're going to change it after the news. We're going to talk about alcohol, specifically where you can buy it. Pub landlords have fumed over Rachel Reeves' budget hikes on business rates. Some saying they'll go up by 76% for the average pub. And that is potentially closing doors and killing jobs, they say. The Treasury has offered a £4 billion support package to help with pavement drinks and one-off events. But is this actually going to be sufficient? 0345 6060 973. We'll talk about the future of the pub after the new news at 11 o'clock. This is LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. Reports in the US say an oil tanker being pursued by the US Coast Guard near Venezuela tonight is being chased because it wouldn't allow American forces to board it. On Saturday, a second vessel was seized in international waters as part of an operation confirmed by the Department of Homeland Security. The senior research fellow at Chatham House, Christopher Sabatini, believes Caracas may now ask for help from other nations.
I think in part it will try to rally international support to its cause. In part, this could come from Russia, and the Russian government under Vladimir Putin has been a lot more outspoken about this, and there's a particularly self-interested reason in this. In the case of the interception of illegally flagged or illegal boats carrying sanctioned oil, Russia is in violation itself.
Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer and President Trump have talked about the war in Ukraine and the situation in Gaza during what's expected to be their final phone call of the year. The two leaders also discussed the appointment of a new British ambassador to Washington, D.C. The League Against Cruel Sports is claiming reports of suspected illegal fox hunting have increased across the board. It's releasing figures ahead of Boxing Day, which is the busiest day in the UK for ceremonial hunting. The League believes there's been a 16% rise in reports. Israel has approved 19 new settlements in the occupied West Bank. Far-right ministers have said the move is to help to block the establishment of a Palestinian state. The war historian Lynette Nussbacher has been telling LBC that is significant.
The extreme right in Netanyahu's cabinet know that their time might be limited. There's got to be an election, a general election in Israel before October of next year. So they are trying to get as much extreme right-wing stuff done as they can. And I think there's also an unpublicized agenda.
And £10 million worth of drugs have been seized by police in Glasgow. Two men have been arrested and charged after the cocaine and heroin was found in the east of the city. LBC weather, cloudy and mild for much of the UK overnight, while rain will push into northern and western areas. That could be heavy at times as well. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Let's talk about pubs. In her budget speech, Rachel Reeves announced that the business rates relief put in place to safeguard pubs during the pandemic was to be withdrawn. In its place would In its place would come a permanent discount for hospitality venues, which the Chancellor described as the lowest tax rate since 1991. Large annual increases would be capped, Rachel Reeves said. That's thanks to a £4.3 billion support fund raised by increasing the business rates of larger businesses. But while a permanent discount is being introduced, the value of properties has changed, mostly upwards by a large amount in the case of pubs. Now, hopefully to explain some of that complicated stuff in a more easily digestible form is Greg Mulholland, who is the director of the Campaign for Pubs and chair of the British Pub Confederation. Good evening, Greg.
Good evening, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
So I stumbled over that a little bit. Can you tell us exactly what is facing pub landlords these days?
Yeah, well, I mean, this particular issue, and it's what we at the Campaign for Pubs are calling the business rates betrayal, because that's what it is. And just to give a little bit of very brief context, pubs have been paying more. They've been paying twice as much as other businesses overall in terms of their turnover levels for some years. In 2022, Labour promised that they would have a whole new system, that reform the whole unfair system. That got downgraded into 2023. They said, we won't reform the whole system, but we will have permanently lower bills for pubs. And then what we found in the budget, alongside no other support, literally no other support for pubs, and everyone is well aware that pubs are struggling in the cost of living crisis, huge energy bills, customers struggling themselves to go out and afford a pint. They said the Chancellor made an announcement suggesting that there was good news on business rates, but in actual fact, what pubs are now facing next April. And this is including the relief, the transitional relief they're talking about, is rateable values going up hugely. You've mentioned that. Now, it's actually not based on property. It's actually based on this rather bizarre thing called fair maintainable trade. And that's going through the roof for pubs. And bills will skyrocket for the majority of pubs. It's simply unsustainable. And landlords up and down the country are saying the government must back down on this. They must change their mind on that, or you will see devastation in the sector of a sort that we have never seen before.
Yes, the correct me if I'm wrong, but the tax that we're talking about is going to be based on the rateable value of the business. And for pubs, am I right in thinking it's gone up about 75% as compared to only 4% for large supermarkets? Do you think that's fair? Because supermarkets do trade in the essentials of life, and pubs tend not to.
Well, no, it's grossly unfair, because you're talking about huge businesses that clearly can reduce costs and maximise profits, which is not something that small businesses can always do. And it's actually small businesses that employ more people overall, pubs, shops, all sorts of small businesses all over the country. And yet that's not being understood. And of course, these small businesses are being hit with other things, such as, there was a huge hike in employers' national insurance back in April in the last budget. And that and the increase in minimum wage led to around 84,000 jobs lost by the autumn in hospitality. So that's the impact. But if this business rates change is allowed to go ahead, you will see pubs closing, you will see jobs lost. It simply cannot happen, and that's why landlords are so angry.
Yeah, the minimum wage is a bit of an odd thing to complain about, to my eyes. I mean, it was a small wage for the least well-paid people in the land, and it was greeted badly by the pub trade. But, you know, if your business depends on paying people a wage that they can't live on, and the rest of us have to chip in and subsidise through the benefits system just to keep a roof over their heads, then does that business deserve to survive?
No, no one's complaining about wage levels. But, you know, when the government says, oh, aren't we marvellous for increasing minimum wage? Well, they're not paying it. Small businesses are. We think that the levels of national insurance was the big problem. You know, that brought down the threshold, which meant that much smaller businesses of all kinds are doing it. And let's remember that we are talking about some of the hardest working people. All these glib soundbites that I'm afraid too often politicians come out with of hard working people. The hardest working people you will find are the many people running small businesses. at the moment, many of whom, including in the pub sector, very few of whom are actually making any money themselves, but they are still employing people. They still want to employ people. They still want to give young people their first jobs and their first experience, but they're simply finding it harder and harder to do so. And the problem is that, you know, if you, I mean, to make in a consumer way, if you go and buy a pint of beer for £5, that might be unrealistic in London, but I'm up in Yorkshire and that's still, you know, perfectly realistic. Basically, the cost of that that pint to the pub from the brewery is, and these are all average figures, but £1.31. So how does it get to £5? And how much is the pub making? You look at the tax levels. 83p is VAT. 56p is duty. 35p is business rates. 29p is employment taxes. A huge, an enormous proportion is going straight from that pint. So the brewer isn't making a huge amount if they're a small brewer. And the publican on that £5 pint that they basically bought for £1.31, if they're a free house, it's important to say that, they're making 13p profit on average. Yes. It is not sustainable.
Right, okay.
And the government has to stop seeing pubs as a cash cow, because that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but the biggest figure that you just mentioned was the amount that the publican gives to the brewery. And I wonder to what extent do the contracts that breweries impose on their tied publicans make their life hard by restricting what they can sell and how much they can pay for it?
Well, we would absolutely agree with you, and that's one of our big issues, and you will hear that from the Campaign for Pubs, because we are an independent organisation. And one of the things that we are campaigning for very hard, and we actually said this to the government, was to stop the abuse of the beer tie. So the figures I gave you there are for an independent pub. It'd be far higher and lower profits for a tie pub. So you're absolutely right. That's a huge issue. And yet the government's not interested in doing that. That would be something, Nick, that would cost the taxpayer, the exchequer, absolutely nothing to allow pubs and publicans to keep more of the profits that they are making, rather than it going to these, I'm afraid, in nearly all cases, offshore property companies. So, yes, that's a huge issue. But in terms of the business rates, what's been proposed is unfair. Interestingly, and you brought up the tied system, that the bizarre system of calculating pubs' business rates, it's not what you'd expect. It's not, you know, space, it's not turnover. It's this thing called fair maintainable trade. And that's been agreed with the big trade associations who represent the huge offshore pub companies and big breweries, because it allows them to keep rental levels higher than they should be. It also, in many cases, as we're seeing now, means that business rates level, rateable values are also inflated. So that's something else we are campaigning on. But all in all, what we are saying, the revaluation is wrong. It's absurd in the current conditions, quite clearly. It must be scrapped. We need to have some support through the next year. And then this government must do what it promised, which is genuine, proper reform, a genuine overhaul of the system for calculating business rates for pubs going forward. That's what they promised. And in the end, you know, if we hold politicians to their promise, they either deliver or they do not. So that's what they promised. It's there in writing. They've said it again and again. And that is what is needed, because it simply is untenable to allow the current changes to go through in April, because it will be devastating.
But what has also been devastating is recent history on the pub trade. Pubs have been closing for years. This is not a new thing. Almost a quarter of pubs in the country closed between 2000 and 2019. That's 13,600 gone in 20 years. 2,250 closed between 2000 and 2024. 400 pubs closed last year. It's not Labour's fault. It's our fault for not going, and it's the pub's fault for not giving us something that we want to go to.
Well, I mean, I don't think either of those things are true, and we could have an hour's show talking about pub closures, and we'd be delighted to contribute, because actually many, many of those pubs that closed were entirely profitable and were allowed to be converted to supermarkets or redeveloped for profits of companies. So it wasn't that they were not viable. And actually, if you look, and you mentioned it yourself, you mentioned the tide system, there are many wonderful pubs around the country, and those ones that are still independent and able to offer customers what they want free from the artificial tied pricing and able to buy from local breweries, they are the ones that are doing best. They're the ones that are surviving. But, you know, the reality is that the COVID pandemic was a disaster for pubs, clearly. It was very tough for the whole country. But, you know, pubs were shut. Many publicans now, we've got the cost of living crisis on top of COVID, and many publicans are still paying off government COVID bounce back loans. They're still paying private loans because of the debts they had to incur for that period when they were making no money. Then we go straight into the cost of living crisis. Energy bills through the roof. The government's taken no action whatsoever on energy bills for businesses. It did some limited things in terms of consumers. So every single thing you look at, we are talking about viable businesses. Businesses that are profitable, but who are they profitable to? They're currently profitable to the government, who is milking them as a cash cow. And they are also, as you've alluded yourself, profitable to these offshore property companies. But why isn't the government asking where that profit is going? Why should the profit of a pub in here in Yorkshire or down in the southeast or in Wales or Scotland, why should that profit be going to the Cayman Islands when it should be staying in the UK economy? Because independent pubs, like independent shops, contribute more to their local economies than the big chains do. That's simply a reality.
Do you think that there should be something that the government does about the increasing sort of hoovering up of small independent pubs by these large cash-rich, well, you call them property companies. That's partly true. Some of them own hotel chains and so on. Others own hundreds, if not thousands, of pubs. And they will take a pub that is an independent, and they will just subsume it into their own sort of corporate bland product, thereby to the detriment of the customer, which gets less of a choice, and the taxpayer or the HMRC, which gets less of the income as it disappears abroad.
Yeah, absolutely. We absolutely think there should be action, and the government seems, this government and the last government, do seem completely blind to this. Now, it works both ways. I'm glad to say that there are, you know, some of these pubs owned by the large companies that have failed and failed, that are then being bought independently. The freehold is being bought, and they're operated as independent pubs, and then suddenly succeeding with a little bit of investment. So it does work both ways. But another indicator of that is, you know, up and down the country, we talk about the pub closure figures, and you're right, you know, pubs have closed, and there's many reasons for that over the years. But at the same time, we've seen this remarkable rise in micro pubs, craft beer bars, brewery taps on industrial estates where the small brewers are based. And that is because, actually, it's been so difficult to buy the historic pubs from these companies, because they always demand far, far more than the pub is actually worth as a pub because of the value of the tie or the fact they want to sell it as development. So people are opening pubs in shops, in railway arches. And, you know, that's to be welcomed, but it's absurd that those entrepreneurs who are doing that because they want to run an independent pub, bar, craft beer bar, real ale bar, brewery tap, they're having to do that because then they can't, in so many cases, get their hands on it. So we do have the solutions for this. We have the solutions in planning terms, and we also have the solution in terms of stopping the abuse of the tie. And one of those things would be that you cannot enforce the tie, you cannot operate the tie. And what that means for listeners, it doesn't just mean that you've got to buy your beer from a brewery. It actually means that you are forced to pay hugely, grossly inflated prices for beer and other drinks, and in some cases, other products. That's unsustainable. That's also killing pubs. And just to bring it back to the business rates, Nick, the same representatives of these companies and their lobbyists are the ones behind the Fair Maintainable Trade system that is now causing such disaster for pubs in April. So we are saying to the government, wake up, realise who you are speaking to. When you speak to these big trade bodies, you are not speaking to pubs and publicans. And you have to start listening to the voice of pubs and publicans and pub campaigners, the people in this country who really care about our pubs, not those who are milking them. And if we can get that across and we can start getting some change, people listening to publicans, then we will have a chance of some real positive change to turn this round.
Good talking to you, Greg. Thanks for that. Greg Mulholland, Director of the Campaign for Pubs and Chair of the British Pub Confederation. So, are you going to the pub less? I do note that younger people tend to be doing just that. Gen Z, as they're called, or Z, as some people would pronounce it, 18 to 24-year-olds, they don't drink nearly as much as older generations did at that age. And I wonder if this is just the natural order of things. As society changes, if pubs don't, then they will just die out. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
LBC.
Think about cheese. Make your thoughts cheesier. Now add 100% chicken breast fillet, chipotle sauce and a mega cheese melt. And it's giving the new cheesy chicken stack at McDonald's. Did we mention it's cheesy?
Cheese.
Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yeah, we're talking about pubs. Many pubs are closing, partly as a reaction to the budget, which was unkind to them. The trend for closures is perhaps going to increase, though, because young people drink less than their older generations did at their age. And if that continues, then the future of the pub is not certain. And just on, if we just sort of step back and look at what we're talking about, if alcohol was invented today, it would immediately be made illegal. I mean, it's the cause of over 10,000 deaths a year. It results in tens of billions of pounds of damage and cost to the NHS, the police, courts, prisons, social services and so on. Set against the benefits of drinking less, what does the fate of the dealers who peddle in it matter? 0345 6060 973. Harpenden. Hello, Rob.
Hi.
Rob.
Hang on a minute. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, good. So I run a small business, a small retail business in Harpenden in Hertfordshire. We are a retail shop. We're a hearing aid consultancy. And after COVID, there was a lot of support for all high street and small retail businesses. And that dropped our rates significantly to allow us to survive and to reopen after lockdowns. I discovered that the rate relief that we were receiving is being taken away in April.
Yes.
The increase in property rates, the change in the multiplier, and the loss of that revenue, that protection, will increase our rates by a staggering 330%.
And so what does that mean in actual financial terms?
It means in financial terms our rate bill will go up from just over £2,000 a year to somewhere in the region of £10,000 to £11,000 a year.
But was that £2,000 artificially reduced because of the effect of COVID?
Yeah, some of it was, yeah, absolutely.
So the difference between the two figures is not, is sort of an... you can't justify comparing the one with the other because the first figure, the lower figure, was squashed down because of the government action to help businesses during COVID. So what might it have been?
It wasn't. We had our rates were about, off the top of my head, were probably about £5,000 pre-COVID.
Right.
But we had that benefit, as did all businesses, And the reality is we somehow have to try to survive with all of the dramatic increase in cost in running a very small business. And when I say a very small business, I mean there's five members of staff. We've had to pull in the reins, not invest, not bring in new staff, reduce all of our investments, and now suddenly to be hit with a true increase overnight, which will go up 330%.
Yes, but you just to sort of concentrate on those figures, you have been paying much less. If before COVID it was 5,000 and it went down to 2,000 during COVID, then that's 3,000 that you saved. So if COVID hadn't happened, then it would have been from 5,000 to 8,000, which is not far off what the bill that you're talking about.
I think sitting down working it out, to be honest with you, I'm sitting in a car and I'm trying to remember all the numbers. The hard facts are that it is going to cost us a lot more to open up our doors after the 6th of April than it is now. The effect of COVID was there was no support at all for me as a business owner. All of my staff, everyone, were on furlough, which is fantastic. I had no earnings at all, but I still opened my doors every single day to provide a service because the NHS couldn't help people. So I put in all of my time and effort, probably worked harder for 100 days at the start of lockdown, not having a day off, giving something to the country, and the time that I'm expecting something back is when there's nothing there.
All right, Rob, I'm going to have to move on, but thanks for that. I appreciate that call. Anto says, why pay £7 for a pint in a trendy pub when you can get a pint for £3 in Spoons? Well, I think the reason is the word that you use there, trendy. I mean, if people, you know, people will choose to pay more for a different surroundings. Belsize Park. Hello, Judy.
Hello. I just wanted to mention something. Over 40 years ago now, the little village in Hertfordshire where my late father lived, the owners of the local pub were deciding that they were going to, I think, sell it and turn it into a sort of steakhouse restaurant. And the villagers in the village clubbed together and formed a group that drew up shares. They bought the pub. They took shares in the pub. They used local people from the village that had skills in carpentry or electrics or anything to completely refurbish it. Hmm. It's still running today. Huh. It's owned by the village.
Really?
Yeah. And I think other pubs have done this. This was the very first one. But when they had all this meeting and all this worry about it closing, and my dad, who was quite a bullshy kind of person, said, this is ridiculous. We'll buy it. And they did it. They all clubbed together. And when my dad died and his house was sold, the shares that he had, the first offer went to the new owner of his house. I don't know whether they took them over, but if that happened when a house was sold, then the new owner would be offered the shares, and if they didn't want to have them, they were then distributed out among other people in the village. But that pub is still running. It's doing extremely well. They don't have a great big brewery that they have to pay anything to, and it's going great. And if you want me to name it, I'll name it.
Well, to me, what you just described sounds great, but it also sounds like the potential for all sorts of problems and difficulties, because people would perhaps want it to go in one direction or another. Some people might not want to work in it. Some people might be desperate to run it. And
no,
but none of that happened?
They set up a board of directors, which the village people voted for, and it has been running incredibly well and successfully ever since.
You know, rural pubs, they do say it's the centre of local life, yet in spite of the story that you just told us, most locals don't go to them, and those that do drive. And I don't know whether the pub that you're describing is one of those out-in-the-country pubs.
It is out in the country.
Right, but that always struck me as an odd combination, though, because you've got to get there by driving, and driving and alcohol is not good bedfellows.
Well, it's become more of a sort of community centre, in a way, for the people in the village.
Right.
Because there are several, I don't know how many hundred of thousand people living in that area, and they use it. And all I know is it's still running incredibly successfully, and this has been over 40 years.
Hmm. Okay, good to hear from you, Judy. Thanks for that. That's a good news story. More of your calls on this to come. I mean, I wonder if you are a part of Gen Z and you don't really have the same relationship with alcohol as your parents, perhaps. And if that's the case, and the reports are true that 18 to 24-year-olds, younger people, don't drink as much as their parents did, and if that continues into their older age, then we are really looking at the end of the pub. They won't be able to survive. And, you know, maybe for the health of the nation, it'd be a good thing, perhaps. 0345 6060 973. We're going to take a break for the news, and then immediately after that, we're going to talk about a free speech row about, well, the Telegraph is suggesting that we won't be able to sing Christmas songs in pubs anymore because the government won't allow it. The actual truth of it is somewhat different, and we'll get to that shortly after this news update with Tim Daly.
Reports in the US are saying an oil tanker being pursued by the US Coast Guard near Venezuela is being chased because it wouldn't allow American forces to board it. On Saturday, a second vessel was seized in international waters. Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer and President Trump have talked about the war in Ukraine and the Gaza situation during what's thought to be their last phone call of the year. The two leaders also discuss the appointment of a new ambassador to Washington. And Israel has approved 19 new settlements in the occupied West Bank. Far-right ministers have said the move is to help to block the establishment of a Palestinian state. LBC weather, cloudy and mild for much of the UK overnight. Rain will push into northern and western areas, which could be heavy at times, and we'll see a low of around 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Ain't that for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you the best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beechwood smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Mmm, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
This festive season at McDonald's, get
rich deals every day.
Okay, okay. With a sausage sandwich for just...
Let's see, net an MP.
Six chicken McNuggets for just...
Net an MP.
Fine. Get Grinch deals every day in
the McDonald's app.
18 plus app only. Ends 24th of December. One use per offer. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
Merry Christmas, my love.
Merry Christmas, Mum.
Merry Christmas, Nanny.
Happy New Year!
From the UK's first mobile phone call to the first text, we've been connecting you at Christmas since 1984 on Vodafone, the nation's network. The nation's network, Vodafone UK, supporting the nation since 1984. Learn more at vodafone.co.uk/TNN.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
The Telegraph reports that pub landlords must ban offensive lyrics under new laws, requiring them to take all reasonable steps to protect staff from third-party harassment. And Labour's Employment Rights Bill, which became law last week, employers will have a legal duty to prevent harassment by third parties relating to a protected characteristic. And one of the things that the Telegraph is warning us of is that we will henceforth no longer be able to join in the pub with sing-alongs to Baby It's Cold Outside, Do They Know It's Christmas and Jingle Bells, among other songs. Let's talk about this with Gillian Howard. Gillian is an employment lawyer and author of Secrets and Lies, Tales of an Employment Lawyer. Good evening, Gillian.
Good evening, Nick.
Is this the usual hysterical response to anything showing consideration for others from the Telegraph, or do they have a point?
Probably the former. This is a fairly hysterical response to something that is extremely important. Third-party harassment has been around for a long time, and there was a very famous case before it was unlawful in a statute involving Bernard Manning, who was invited to a De Vere hotel as an after-dinner speaker. This is 1996. And he made the most disgusting sexist and racist comments in front of and about and to two waitresses who were black. They sued De Vere Hotels, saying that they should have been responsible or should be responsible for the behaviour of a third party, that's Bernard Manning, and the Employment Appeal Tribunal held that that was correct, that as the employer knew that Bernard Manning was in the habit of making the most horrendous racist and sexist language, the hotel should either not have allowed Bernard Manning to have been invited, or certainly shouldn't have allowed those waitresses to attend that particular function in order to protect them from sexual and racial harassment. We then had, for a very short time, for 3 years, Section 40 of the Equality Act, which said that employers were liable for the racist or sexist behaviour of third parties once they had done it more than twice. So third party strike and you're out. But in 2013, the then Tory government repealed Section 40, so employers were not held liable. Now, social norms and what is laughingly called banter, the actual meaning of the word banter is inoffensive jokes. But we're talking about offensive jokes, offensive language. And as social norms change, so does the conduct of third parties, employers, employees, consultants, suppliers, drivers who work on the premises and meet employers, employees. And so their conduct and their language must change. It will, of course, depend on one of two things, because the definition of harassment is conduct which has the purpose of or the effect of violating that person's dignity or creating an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating or offensive environment for that person to work in. And luckily now, women and men are feel much more empowered not to put up with racist or sexist or ageist language, which is offensive, or behaviour. And so, yes, pub landlords, for example, if members of the public who habitually go and drink in the pub have been in the habit of singing rude, lewd songs, making anti-Semitic comments, making racist comments, the employer next October, when this act comes into force, this part of the act comes into force, will have to take all reasonable steps to prevent harassment by third parties, not pick up the pieces after they've done it. They have a very strong preventative duty. It will be up to the employment judge to decide where the line is drawn, because they have said under a particular line, no employee should be so sensitive. But as sensitivities move up the line and as social norms move with the times, what was acceptable 30 years ago isn't now. And I'll tell you an example. It happened to me 30 years ago. I was walking out of an appeal court when the judge called out to me, "I bet you're known as Sex on Legs, Gillian." My female client said, "What did he say?" I said, "Oh, just keep walking." Now, I would report him to the judicial complaints body now, but 30 years ago, it was the sort of thing that was said, and I put up with it. But women men, homosexuals, you know, people of different religions, people who have transgendered won't put up with it. And so employers are going to have to take what are called all reasonable steps. So, for example, I'm going to suggest that pub landlords put notices in pubs explaining that unacceptable behaviour, unacceptable language, or songs which clearly state or have an innuendo of sexism or racism, for example, will result in those people being asked to leave or being ejected from the pub and being banned in the future.
This all hinges on what, as you said, what a judge might deem is and is not beyond a line. Doesn't that in itself present a difficulty? Because judges, as you just described, aren't known to have the same beliefs and standards as the rest of us ordinary people.
That could have been true a few years ago, but I think some... And I'm going to be a little controversial here. I think some judges have been taking too many woke tablets recently. I defended an employer unsuccessfully when an Irish man was called Paddy. He objected and said that was racist, and the judge agreed with him. Now, when you get to that level of sensitivity, I have to say, I think the judges should put, you know, their feet on the ground and say, you know, come on. There is certain behaviour and language over which the line has gone, and no employee should be expected to put up with it. The problem for employers with this third-party liability is that they have no power or control over third parties. That's why they have to do quite a bit of things beforehand to try to show that they are preventing it, having clear policies, training staff and insisting that they see evidence of training from their suppliers, their consultants, the drivers who come onto site and meet their staff, and members of the public who go into pubs. They'll have to do risk assessments where there may be a high risk. For example, where people work in customer-facing roles in shops, for example, receptionists. And they're going to have effective reporting and response mechanisms when an employee reports that they have been subjected to unacceptable behaviour or unacceptable language. Whether these Christmas songs pass over that line will, I'm sorry to say, be the decision of... It won't just be a judge, it will be a panel of three. In any discrimination case, there will still be an employer representative, an employee, a trade union representative, and a judge. And hopefully the two lay wing members will tell a judge what is acceptable and what isn't in a workplace, may not have been.
Right. But even those two lay people will have different opinions of what is and is not acceptable, as will the person who received the harassment or heard a song, yes, or whatever it is. But one person, it would be completely fine. For instance, if you're at the bar, you might say thanks, love, to a woman if you were in the 1970s. Now, one woman might think that that's endearing, and another woman might take offence at that. So it's just so vague, it seems to me, as to be almost unenforceable.
Well, it won't be unenforceable because employers will be required to set the standards as they have been, you know, in the past. They will be giving training, explaining to their staff what isn't acceptable. Now, where someone knows someone very well, let's say a man who knows a woman very well, knows that she'd be quite flattered to be called love, that's one thing. But I've always said to men in particular, if in doubt, don't say it. And one has to be much more careful, more formal in a workplace now, because men, women, homosexuals, people who've transgendered are more sensitive. And so employers are going to have to lay down far tighter rules. And a workplace is a formal setting. It isn't what you are allowed to say or you do say in a private setting.
But of course, sorry to interrupt, but the workplace may be a formal setting, but some people's workplace is a pub, as we've been talking about before, and that's not formal at all. Decorum and alcohol are not good bedfellows. Mm. So what somebody might think is acceptable to say at the beginning of the evening, they might blurt out thinking it's amusing at the end of the evening. So is it just a matter of time or the quantity of alcohol consumed that might be mitigating factors?
Well, it will be a defence for an employer to say, we took all reasonable steps to prevent harassment. We put up notices which said we do not accept ageist, racist, sexist language or language against people with disabilities or trans or homophobic language and that kind of thing. And if during the course of the evening the member of the public gets drunker and drunker and then starts to get looser and looser with their language, then the employer must have the publican must have a rule that they will be asked to leave or modify or stop their language. And if they don't, they must be ejected from the pub. So the employer has a defence, but they will have to, unfortunately, be far more careful and more cautious and more observant about how people who are drinking, as you've said, drinking loosens tongues, and what they might be not saying at the beginning of the evening, they might feel much more confident about saying later on in the evening. Therefore, the employer must have a provision for getting rid of that person out of the pub once they start becoming or behaving in an unacceptable way.
Do you think that we've got too sensitive just recently, that people are in fact on the edge of their seats waiting to be offended just so that they can be paid attention to?
No, I don't think so. I think it's social mores, social morals, the world we live in. As I say, it was perfectly acceptable for a judge to shout after me, something which I think is totally unacceptable. I thought of it, it was unacceptable then and it's unacceptable now. But people are more empowered now. And I think the world has moved on. What was supposedly a funny joke 30 years ago, I had a case where a man had a wooden leg and was a messenger. And people used to shout out, oh, it's Hopalong. They thought that was funny. Well, he didn't. And so I think as people have become more empowered and the world has become less tolerant, mainly because of the Me Too movement of Floyd, the terrible tragedy of Floyd's death, I think people are now realising that what is going on in the workplace, not in your own private home, but what is acceptable in the workplace is less acceptable now, not permitted now. But and I don't think people do sit and wait and then jump on any sort of offence. They don't take offence unless they do take offence.
Yes, but do people have the right not to be offended?
Yes, they do. Because as I say, I for my corporate clients, tell them I ban the word, the B word, banter, because they've misused banter. Banter, the meaning, as I say, the meaning of banter is inoffensive jokes. But banter in the workplace doesn't actually mean that. It means, in some cases, offensive language. The person who's saying it thinks it's funny. Or sometimes they are bullying people who they see as less powerful, women who are less able to speak up for themselves, ethnic minorities who fear they might get the sack if they start complaining about their boss or their fellow colleagues. I think people are now feeling, as I say, feeling more empowered. And because the law is now going to place a positive duty on the employer to prevent or take all reasonable steps to prevent harassment by third parties and, of course, by their own employees, I think this will assist people who in the past have put up with sometimes pretty awful language and pretty awful behaviour.
Yes, there are grades, and we've discussed that. It seems to me that even having, you know, had this conversation with you and you enlightening me about the various issues, it still seems vague and ill-defined and yet highly charged. It seems like the sort of thing that is designed to enrich employment lawyers.
Yes, you've got a good point there. I think we will be actually seeing far more cases where employees have said that they've been upset by third parties, for example, drivers wolf whistling at women in the workplace. But it's up to the employer now to say, no, we set standards of behaviour in the workplace. And if a driver is known to be wolf whistling at the women, then the employer is perfectly entitled to say to that employer, don't send the driver anymore to us. He's misbehaving. Or send him, but tell him he is not permitted to wolf whistle at women, to make sexist jokes at them, or to make worse than sexist jokes.
Yeah, explain the error of his ways. Gillian, thank you so much for that. Very good to talk to you. Gillian Howard, employment lawyer and author of Secrets and Lies, Tales of an Employment Lawyer. So it might not be that we can't sing songs in pubs for fear of offending anybody, but pubs aren't looking at a rosy future necessarily. We were talking about that just before. Have you stopped going to the pub? Do you do that less than you used to? Maybe you're one of what they call Generation Z, the 18 to 24-year-olds, who don't drink nearly as much as their forebears. Is that a reaction to seeing your parents drunk? Or are you just interested in different things? 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's been a Hanukkah horror and one almost like any before. 15 partygoers murdered on a beach in Australia, and we heard from eyewitness Tommy.
It was literally just, it was like a carnage scene, everyone screaming.
Back on the home front, Greater Manchester Police Chief Constable Stephen Watson spelt out the impact for British Jews.
Group of 10-year-old girls wanting to go to a Hanukkah party where they should be, frankly, interested in balloons and bicycles are making a request for armed police officers.
Hanukkah is meant to be a celebration of light, but why is the outlook currently so dark for so many?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster. With Sage Copilot, T's and C's apply.
Think about cheese. Make your thoughts cheesier. Now add 100% chicken breast fillet, chipotle sauce and a mega cheese melt. And it's giving the new cheesy chicken stack at McDonald's. Did we mention it's cheesy?
Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favourite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, the cosmetics company store and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from Central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We were talking about the predicament that pubs find themselves in. Theo's 19 says, I think the reason why younger people, Gen Z, don't drink in pubs is because it's getting far too expensive. The average pint in London will set you back a fiver nowadays, which is over double what the price was 20 years ago. Well, what isn't over double what the price of it was 20 years ago? And I think you'll find you're a bit out there. I think the average pint in London was a fiver some while ago. Wandsworth, hello, Sarah.
Oh, hi, Nick. I mean, I'm an old person, really. And so I'm of the generation, you know, that if a builder whistled at me, if I was lucky enough when I was young, or if I was called love, you know, when somebody is sort of, I don't know, serving me or whatever, it meant nothing to me. It just completely it meant nothing at all. That's what I don't understand. I didn't take it personally. I just get about my life.
But did it only mean nothing to you because it was normal?
Probably.
Because you were used to it.
Yes, I mean, I think that's probably true. It was relatively normal. And because it was normal, in sort of quotes things then, it didn't register.
Right, because it would have registered if a man had said it to another man, wouldn't it? If a waiter puts a plate down in front of a woman and says, "There you are, love," then that's one thing. But if he puts it in front of a man and says, "There you are, love," then that would occasion comment.
Yes. And I was never in a situation with a man in a restaurant or wherever where a male waiter did come along and put food in down in front of him and say, "Here you are, love." And I think if he had, whoever that was with me, would have probably looked a bit askance. Eyebrows would have gone askance. Yes.
We both reached for the same word at the same time. Askance.
Askance. But I don't think he would have got in a state about it.
Mm. So that's what you think that people are getting in nowadays, a state.
I do, actually. And I think that's the thing that I don't understand. It's this, I get in a state over everything. And it's like a kind of terrible kind of self-obsession of I'm entitled to get into a state.
Yes, one of the things that I did say to Gillian was that I did get the feeling that people these days are eager to take offence because it draws attention to themselves.
Well, it makes you feel important, doesn't
it? I guess that's what I meant, yeah.
Yes, whereas my generation, I mean, I went to a convent school, so I don't know if that's anything to do with it, but I think my upbringing, my generation, you weren't brought up to think that you were important or more important than anybody else.
Well, yes, but by the difference in the sexes, you were perhaps brought up to believe that you were less important than men, because men wouldn't have put up with it, and women were encouraged to do so.
True. No, that is true. But again, and this is again, maybe it's just me, if a man was predatory, or, I mean, I had a boss who used to say terrible things and all sorts to me, then you would say something and you would stop it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sort of saying that women should just continue to be sort of, you know, have awful things said to them and men groping them or anything like that at all. But it's just this extreme kind of sensitivity to being called just love, just life, you know,
endearments.
The
yes.
Just, I don't know, I'm just trying to find a word. It doesn't even feel like an endearment. And also, just quickly, before we go, I do think it's money for the employment lawyers, because I'm sure people will exploit this, won't they?
Well, they'll, yes, well, lawyers will get to fight with other lawyers over where the line is. And there's probably a lot of money in that. Thank you, Sarah. Joseph says, all these people with all these small businesses, we're talking about pubs, who find it so hard and are complaining that they're doing it for such a minimal return, why do they keep doing it? Well, Joseph, you might as well ask, why does a parent keep taking care of their child? They grew the business from nothing, it's their baby. North Carolina, hello, Graham.
In a football pitch, a place of work.
Say that again?
Is a football pitch a place of work?
Yes, well, it is for footballers.
Well, how many insults are hurled during any football match?
What, to the nearest million?
Well, see, it's absurd. And the cabbie whistling at a woman, is the street a place of work? He's in his cab, and he whistles at someone on the street. Who's going to come after him?
Well, the cabbie is in his place of work. So he's representing the cab company poorly, you might say.
Right. But I think the last comment about litigiousness and the amount of money it costs to pursue that is right up there.
Yeah. Well, this is an American talking to a Brit about litigiousness. That's a new one.
Oh, we're terrible. We're terrible. We're awful.
Well, you lead the way. You lead the way in that regard. If nothing else, that's for sure. Thanks, Graham. Anne says one problem with pub closures and other business closures is property freeholders hiking up leases and rents, so business owners can't pay and they close. The buildings, when empty, are still making money for the freeholders. How are they making money for the freeholders? By the increase in their value, you mean, perhaps? Yes. Well, it is tough for the independent, and the independents are being, when they fall on hard times, they are being hoovered up by these giant chains, and that's not really to the benefit of everybody, because it reduces reduces choice. And then when they have something of a monopoly in an area, then they can whack up the prices, as we've seen. And Rob says, the top eight pub chains increased their profits from 15 to 48% in the 2024 financial year. Independent pubs have been increasing to a high of 50% last year. If a pub cannot create an offering and a business model to attract customers and pay its staff enough, it is not viable. It's not viable. Why should taxpayers, who are always being told we can't pay benefits, fund schools and hospitals, support these businesses? Well, controversially, I'm going to give you the last word on that, Rob. I'm going to change it up after the news. Now, this is, talking of controversial, new animal welfare laws in England will include a full ban on trail hunting, prohibiting hounds from following artificial scents that can lead to live animal encounters. Also, the shooting of brown hares for most of the year will also be banned, protecting them during breeding season when mothers are pregnant and nursing their young. Will these bans effectively halt illegal hunting activities or drive them underground? And do you really care? Are we hypocritical in our interest in the welfare of some animals and not concerned at all about others? 0345-6060-973-LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. The government says nothing is off the table following reports it's considering an Australian-style ban on social media for under-16s. The Department for Science, Innovation and Technology has been telling LBC it's closely monitoring Canberra's approach, but any action should be based on robust evidence. More now from LBC's Holly Harris.
Newspaper reports this morning are claiming the Prime Minister and the Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, are having discussions about possibly copying the controversial Australian policy. Even so, sources within the government are also believed to be saying any decision here would be a long way off. LBC's been told there are no current plans to introduce a blanket ban on smartphones or social media for children, although the government also says we understand parents' concerns about the impacts of social media.
A 30-year-old man has been arrested following the deaths of two teenagers after a car hit a tree in Surrey. A third is fighting for their life after it happened in Hurst Green on Saturday night. The authorities in Venezuela have warned they will take what are being called all corresponding actions following the targeting of vessels near its waters by the United States. It seized two ships and is currently chasing an oil tanker after President Trump announced a blockade of what's being described as sanctioned oil. But the geopolitical advisor, Rina Shah, has been telling LBC the action against Venezuela could be dangerous.
You listen closely to the Trump administration every day of the week. They continue to actually make the case that this is how drugs are flowing into our country. And this is how China is also trying to choke us by getting with these narco-terrorist folks. But I don't think the average American understands the right here, right now, which really risks escalation.
Collars for pets which give off electrical shocks could be banned as part of a new government strategy targeting animal welfare. It's due to be announced later on today and includes a ban on trail hunting over fears that's being used as a cover for illegal fox hunting. And it's being predicted the country will make another 3 million festive journeys later on today. Motorists are being urged to take extra care in wet and misty conditions, although more trips are still expected on Christmas Eve. LBC weather, cloudy and mild cold for much of the UK overnight. Rain will push into northern and western areas as well, and that could be heavy at times. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
The government is set to ban trail hunting for fear that it is being used as a smokescreen, in their words, for chasing and killing wild animals. Let's talk about this with Mo Metcalf-Fisher. Mo is Director of External Affairs at the Countryside Alliance. He joins us on the line now. Hello, Mo.
Good evening. Great to be with you.
Are they right? Is trail hunting used as a smokescreen for killing wild animals?
No, it's look, trail hunting has existed ever since the last time the Labour government wanted to waste, you know, hundreds of hours of parliamentary time debating the issue of hunting. It was brought in to ultimately protect the infrastructure around hunting. You know, there's no debate that hunting contributes a huge amount to the rural economy, and hunts have been following the law. There has been prosecutions under the Hunting Act where there are examples of law breaking. The police and authorities must deal with that robustly, as they should any crime. But the vast bulk of Hunting Act offences have actually related to poaching rather than the registered hunts that we're talking about today, and who are in all the pictures, no doubt, in the newspapers tomorrow.
Yeah, okay, but aren't hunts being coy, pretending their dogs are only following artificial fox scents? You can't tell a dog which scent to follow, and I'm sure an actual fox smells a lot more exciting to a dog, so they may be following an artificial one, but if they come across a real fox, they're going to go chase that, aren't they?
Yeah, but the thing is, we, you know, hunt staff are dedicated and they're experts in what they do. They are trained from, you know, for very many years in how to handle the hounds. The relationship between hunt staff, you know, the huntsmen, those that are leading the field on the day, is exceptional. It's a very unique relationship, and you know, they understand one another, and there is all sorts of communication tools that huntsmen use to prevent that from happening. And all steps are taken by hunts to follow the law. And that is what, as a body, the British Hound Sports Association are extremely vocal about. It must be followed. And as I say, where there have been incidences that that's been broken, it is investigated. And sadly, there remains a handful of people who are still fixated on this issue. You know, we've got serious problems in the countryside, and yet we have the government wanting to waste more time debating an issue which, quite frankly, is completely irrelevant to the vast bulk of the British public.
Well, it's not, though. Polling showed that 79% of the public thought the law on fox hunting should be tightened to stop trail hunts from accidentally killing foxes.
Well, look, routinely we poll on this question. Actually, if you ask the public, they really couldn't care less. They don't care about the government prioritising and spending time debating the issue of hunting. You know, there are really real issues. There are people listening into this call tonight who will be working late night shifts. They want the government focused on addressing the cost of living crisis, just like rural people do. Instead, we have a government that wants to distract from those failings and wants to talk about trail hunting again, and that comes on top of the horrendous fallout over the family farm tax and the division that that's caused in the countryside. We're urgently asking the government to reset their relationship with the countryside. They've got a real opportunity now, you know. They've got 100 rural Labour MPs who want to get on with actually doing things to help their rural constituents, and instead you've got this kind of urban-centric London Labour HQ that want to waste time on this issue. I'm sorry, but the vast bulk of people in this country really don't care about the issue of hunting. They want their government to fix the issues that really matter.
Well, you can keep saying that, but if 79% is not the vast bulk, then I don't know what is. 79% of the public thought the law on fox hunting should be tightened. More than that, 85% of the public believe that there's a moral duty to protect animal welfare. And I would question whether it is actually possible to, for a human to control a pack of dogs in their sort of wild chase frenzy once they get to a fox. They're not going to be able to call those dogs off. We're kidding ourselves if we think that's possible.
They do. There has been, you know, so many days of hunting that have been carried out since the Hunting Act was brought in. And there are, you know, a minority of incidents. I said a handful of prosecutions ever since the Hunting Act, the vast bulk of which don't actually relate to the organised trail hunts that have, you know, regulations and practices in place to prevent those things. And as I say, I'm sorry, I disagree with you. And the polling from ORB, which was released around this time last year, and I think there's been some more since then, just show that when you ask the public, you know, trail hunting is not something that ever comes up as a priority. It just isn't. And if the Labour government want to fixate and waste more time on that, that is on them. But I can assure you that the people in the countryside are fed up with it. They just want the government to get on with fixing the real issues, and that's to start with the cost of living crisis and addressing the horrendous fallout over the family farm tax, which is completely unnecessary.
Well, okay, we can talk about that for a second if you like. The family farm tax has been portrayed by the right-wing media as being an attack on ordinary average farmers, but of course it isn't. If you run a business, then you have to pay tax when you pass your business on. So why is a farm such a very special and unique thing? And it affects almost no farmers at all.
The aristocracy own
about 30% of the land. And much of the land, if not most of the farmland that comes up for sale, is snaffled up by either corporations or the super rich with the intent of avoiding tax. That's what the government was trying to address.
Well, I have to disagree with you on your point about the right-wing media. I think that's a pretty broad assumption. It's actually an issue that I've worked at the Countryside Alliance, you know, defending farmers in their time of need with The Guardian, The Independent, you know, some of the most vocal critics of the family farm tax. It's not a right-wing media issue. It's a common sense general public caring about their farmers issue. And if you actually look at the polling on that, it's not just a rural-urban divide. It's rural people and urban people and Labour's own voters who think that the family farm tax is a total catastrophe. But on your point, though, I would actually agree. You know, I've never said, and the Countryside Alliance has ever said, as far as I know, the National Farmers Union has never said that there hasn't been a historic issue with people trying to buy up farmland to evade inheritance tax or to get around paying tax. And I want to see those people, I want to see legislation to prevent that. I want to see family farms kept within the family. And I'm talking to family farmers who haven't got a lot of money, do what they do because they love the countryside. They love this feeling of duty of feeding us all, you and me included, and all your listeners, but also going out and protecting the countryside. You know, the countryside doesn't look like it does by accident. It looks like it does because of the amazing farmers work that farmers put in. And so all we've ever urged the government to do is to rethink the family farm tax. And it's not just farmers and the Countryside Alliance and National Farmers Union saying this. It's your supermarkets, it's your businesses, it's everybody. It's just saying, come on, let's get round the table. We know what you're trying to do, but this is not the way to do it. You're throwing family farms under the bus, and you told them before the election that that wouldn't happen.
But why should farms be treated any different to any other business? If my grandfather started a business, then should he be able to pass that down to his son, and his son pass it down to me ad infinitum? Without paying tax. I mean, why is running a farm such a special type of business?
Yeah, well, personally, I do think that you should be able to do that. That's my personal view. I think we should be encouraging people to keep long-standing family businesses alive. And I've never met anyone that has an issue with that. But specifically on family farms, you know, we are talking about stewards of the countryside. They're a unique role. I actually call them public servants. I think that they, you know, for what they do, they produce a public good. I think we should be making it extremely easy and attractive for them to want to keep farming.
At the moment, the family farm tax
is just disastrous.
Well, I'm not sure that that's true. You could say that for any business. Any business is doing a public good, otherwise they wouldn't be able to sell their goods. I just don't understand.
I'm not criticising any other business. That's far from what I want to do and what anyone that defends farmers would want to do. But that's an issue for their trade bodies. My view is that I'm here to protect and want to support farmers because they're the people that feed us. At the end of the day, we all need to eat. And if we lose our farmers in this country, we'll be depending on foreign imports and given the kind of the nature of global political affairs, that's not a place we should ever want to be in. And we've got to do whatever we can to protect farming in this country. And the family farm tax, I'm afraid, totally undermines the strong relationship we should be having with our farmers.
Yeah, okay. But most land in the country is not run as a farm, and those that are monocultures, which is not what I would call looking after the environment. But okay, let's park that there. Let's talk about the other thing that the government...
I'll take you to a farm, and you can see the amount of work they do. We'll have a good day, but you'll see it for yourself. Yeah, watch Clarkson's farm, you can see it.
I have watched Clarkson's farm, and he's not a real farmer. He's pretending to be one for a TV. But let's talk about shooting hares, because that's the other thing that the government addressed. Shooting hares will be banned for most of the year. At the moment, it's legal to shoot the animals during their breeding season, when pregnant hares are left to bleed out and their young are orphaned and probably die as a result. That seems particularly cruel. What's your opinion on that?
My view on this is that I think, again, we're trying to legislate for a problem that doesn't really exist. We have some huge hare populations, particularly in the east of England. It has largely been a conservation success story, and I don't know anyone that's shooting hares through the breeding season. But again, we've asked the government to produce some evidence that that's going on, and it isn't, and it hasn't produced anything. In fact, they've actually, ministers have turned around and said it doesn't really exist. But again, I just think it's a little bit virtue signalling, and I'd rather kind of focus policies on other areas. You know, if we're talking about enhancing wildlife and the environment, there's lots of things we can be doing, and I just don't think that this is an issue which requires the huge attention that it's been getting. And I absolutely love hares, and you know, I do, and they hold a very special place in the hearts of very many people, but I just don't think this is the big problem that the government are claiming it is.
Right, so you wouldn't object to it becoming illegal, being as, by your measure, it doesn't happen in the first place?
Well, it just doesn't, and no, I'm not gonna. If you want to fight over this, you're not going to get it from me. I just go back to my original point. I just don't think it's necessary legislation we need to be spending loads of time on.
Do you think that there is a disconnect between consumers? I mean, sort of 4/5 of us live in urban areas. 1/5 in rural areas. Do you think there's a disconnect between those who live in urban areas and the food that they eat? Do you think that we don't really understand or appreciate what it is that goes to put meat on our plate and would quite possibly stop eating it if we did?
It's another tricky one, but it's, if anything, with this family farm tax debacle, and you couple that with some pretty good farming programming, not least Jeremy Clarkson's farm on Lambson, I think the public are kind of waking up to asking and wanting to ask questions about where their food comes from. And you've got farmers in this country that will do absolutely anything they can to explain the process behind food. And I think, you know, if there's one positive, if that's a word I could use, in the last year that's come out of this extraordinary row, is that actually people are going, where's this food come from? You know, should I be doing more to support British farmers? And it has given us an opportunity to speak about, you know, the value of say, particularly with meat, the benefits of eating British meat. You know, we have the highest, some of the highest animal welfare standards in the world, and, livestock farming in an incredibly sustainable way. And that's given us an opportunity to kind of highlight all that, as it has as well, I will say, with the kind of strange debates that have been happening in some local councils, like Oxford, where they ban meat and dairy consumption. It's given us an opportunity to actually say, well, you're doing the wrong thing here. You need to be backing your farmers, and you need to be looking at the way that we produce great food.
Yes, but that's the problem, though. Producing great food, and there may be excellent animal welfare standards while they're alive, but producing food out of them involves killing them. Do you think that it's a bit hypocritical to obsess about foxes and hares when, as a nation, we eat 1 billion chickens a year, 3 million cattle are slaughtered for meat, and 14 million lambs are executed for a dinner plate every year.
No, I think most people are fully aware that, that their food has, you know, if they eat meat, if they choose to consume meat, which is the vast bulk of the British public do, they understand that, that something has had to die. What I think is really important from a farming perspective is that those, the public understands that the treatment of those animals from birth all the way to the abattoir has been an exceptional life where they've been loved and cared for and looked after. And I think that that's, again, it's part of the work that farmers do to talk about that. Again, it's been shown in Clarkson's farm, you know, the connect between him and his animals. It's there. And I don't think it's hypocritical. No, I think that the public do get it. And it's the job of livestock farmers, and they're proud to do it, of explaining the huge amount of love and care that they have for looking after their livestock.
Good to talk to you, Mo. Thanks for that. Mo Metcalf-Fisher, Director of External Affairs at the Countryside Alliance. Maybe I was unkind to Jeremy Clarkson. I said that he wasn't a real farmer. OK, he just pretends to be one on TV. Maybe that's a little unfair. What would, might be more accurate is he doesn't have the same concerns as your ordinary average farmer, being as how he earns endless millions of pounds by being on these various TV programs. He is not awake at night worrying that his yearly profits are going to disappear if he loses a lamb, for instance. I guess that's what I meant. What do you think about the assertion from Mo that we don't care about trail hunting, even if it could lead to the killing of foxes? Do you not care? 0345 6060 973, LBC.
This is LBC.
The big day is almost here, and you know what that means. Turkey. Well, not just turkey. M&S British free-range turkey crown with a pork, cherry and chestnut stuffing glazed with maple syrup infused with chilli, cinnamon, clove and nutmeg. It also means Cornish cruncher cauliflower cheese with Emmental pecorino and mozzarella. And British baby parsnips with maple syrup glaze with polenta and pecorino. This is not just food. This is M&S Christmas food. Selected stores.
Mate, did you know you could win £100 worth of points when you scan your BP Me Rewards card?
Yes.
And that can be spent on M&S or Amazon vouchers?
Yes.
Oh, what would I get? Oh, new shoes for Macy, socks for Dad, a scarf for Mum, bottle of red for
scan
me.
Your BP Me Rewards card with every purchase of BP and you could win £100 worth of points every hour. So, don't just scan, scan to win.
What would you get?
Fuel and earplugs.
Offer ends 2nd of January 2026. Participating stores only. T's and C's apply. For details, see bpmerewards.co.uk.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So, as you've been hearing, some protectors of the countryside are up in arms about the government addressing the concerns of many of us townies that there's cruelty afoot. The government is set to ban trail hunting for fear that it is being used as a smokescreen for chasing and killing wild animals. They also will ban the shooting of hares in England for most of the year. At the moment, it's legal to shoot the animals during their breeding season, and that leaves pregnant hares left to bleed out, and their young orphaned and presumably unable to care for themselves, and then they die a long and lingering death. So the government is addressing that. Now, the assertion from Mo, who I was just talking to, is that we don't really care about that. Is that true? 0345 6060 973. And is it a bit hypocritical of us to care about one or two specific animals while chewing through a billion chickens a year in this country? A billion. Thameside, hello, Frank.
Hey there.
Frank.
Are you deliberately trying to set up to wind people up at the time of year?
Not deliberately, no, Frank, no.
Well, you're doing a bloody good job of it.
Well, when you say people, you mean you.
Absolutely not, and don't be so condescending.
You said, am I deliberately trying to wind people up?
Well, you're certainly doing it, whether you are pretending to or not, you are certainly doing it.
Okay, well, let's skip past the pleasantries and get to what it is that you want to say.
you've just had somebody on from the licensed trade explaining how this economically illiterate government are destroying the pub trade by siding with the major financial players in the game rather than the individual traders who run the pubs.
Right, that was last hour's
topic. And then you sail in and start trying to equate the farming community with the same kind of activity.
The same kind of activity. What does that mean?
You've just had somebody explaining in detail how the big pub-owning chains are
I get that part, but how does it relate to the farming issue? I don't understand.
Because what the government say they were trying to target are land-owning PLCs and trusts.
No.
Not individual farmers trying to make a living who are having their income, again, destroyed by the activities of this bunch of incompetents that got elected in July last year.
Your exercise about not what we're talking about, but about the inheritance tax for farmers. Is that what you're on about?
Absolutely.
Right, well, why should farmers be treated so very differently to everybody else? If I have a business, why should I have to pay 40% inheritance tax when I pass it on, and a farmer only pays 20%, having got the first $2 million
free? You've had the financial realities explained to you in terms of the license trade. It is virtually a carbon copy of what this government is doing to the rural economy.
They're not in any way related, Frank. What are you talking about?
I suggest that you do some research and inform yourself before making comments as illiterate as that.
Yeah, well, I suggest that you arm yourself with an argument, not just a fistful of childish insults. Brixton. Hello, Lucy.
Oh, hello, Nick.
Lucy.
Pleasure to talk to you. I've got a wee bit of a hoarse voice, sorry.
Oh, well, there's a lot of it going around.
No, it is. But I definitely wanted to talk to you about this. I am very much an animal lover, so rural very much isn't my background. And I've lived on a farm in Ireland, actually. I'm over here now in Brixton. My feeling is that inheritance tax and the whole rural argument of inheritance tax and farms... My family, they came over from Ireland, built a big business over here, and my parents have passed away fairly recently, and it's been really heartbreaking to, you know, all of that. But we have had to, you know, pay 40%
inheritance tax.
Inheritance tax.
Yes. Sorry,
yes. And within 6 months, and it was like literally, we were panicked. To have to do that, and our parents worked very well, their arses off, may I say.
What kind of business was it?
A building.
Right. So,
yeah,
okay, so you are providing one of life's necessities, just as farmers are.
Well,
why should you have to pay double what farmers are allowed to get away with?
I just don't understand.
They complain and complain and complain, and they're getting such a good deal compared to the rest of us.
Exactly. I'm actually, because I lived on a farm and I worked and I literally helped my father. You know, we lived on a farm in the west of Ireland. You know, I know what rural life is like to an extent. I'm not an urban Londoner, right? So I just wanted to just make the point that it's very infuriating when there are people like Nigel Farage, for instance, running around with his jacket.
Right. Well, talking about pretend farmers, just check his spotless wellies for all the information you need there. I think that the it of this issue about the farmers' inheritance tax is not about farmers at all. It's about the aristocracy, and it's about the super rich, and it's about corporations who have bought up vast tracts of land that could be used as farmland but aren't, and they are being used as tax avoidance measures. The aristocracy own 30% of England. 30%. Corporations own another 18%. Bankers and oligarchs, roughly 18%. It's not about farmers, it's about the super rich trying to get away with tax. And the super rich have a megaphone that is the right-wing press, and people like my friend that I was just talking to there, who are being exercised and who are bellowing on behalf of the super rich. It's not about farmers. If it was just about farmers, we wouldn't have heard anything about it. They would not have been complaining so very much. It's about the interests of the richest among us who want to pass on their wealth without having to pay the tax bill that all of the rest of us have to. It's infuriating. Thanks, Lucy. West Wales. Hello, Nikki.
Oh, hello. Hello there, Nick. First time caller, long time listener to you.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. I've waited 40 years to see trail hunting and fox hunting banned. I'm absolutely ecstatic. It's a callous, barbaric so-called sport. Foxes are self-regulating. They have their own territories. So you don't get, like, whole bunches of foxes living together. And they also do something really revolting called cub hunting, I think in about September, where they actually hunt baby foxes and kill them.
Well, how do you know that, though? Because, I mean, that's illegal, and they say that it doesn't happen, and they point to the few number of prosecutions, but it's a bit difficult to prosecute somebody as they're riding horses across fields.
There are a lot of hunt saboteur groups all over the United Kingdom who are doing a valiant job in sending drones up and watching these hunt illegally. And I think that's partly the reason the Labour government have decided to bring this ban in effect, because they actually have photographic and video footage of things going on.
Do you think it's a bit odd, though, that in a country that gets through, it's a billion chickens, something like 200, I can't remember what the exact figures are, but it's an enormous amount of dead animals that we chew through a year.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a bit odd that we are concerned about some and not really at all about others?
No, I don't, because, I mean, bear baiting was banned years ago. It's just because something's carries on for hundreds of years doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And to actually, you know, tear a fox apart while it's still alive is just absolutely abhorrent. And the people who do it are absolutely abhorrent too. And also, not only that, but they create traffic chaos when their hounds run all over the A roads. They showed footage on the BBC today of sheep running scared through fields because the hounds were in the field hunting a fox. There's not only foxes they hunt stags as well. And, of course, there's hare coursing that goes on.
Mm. Yes, well, they would say that they don't, but I think the reality is that if you've got a pack of dogs and they're charging across a field, following an artificial fox scent, it's entirely likely that they'll come across a real fox scent, and they will be more excited about that, and then the inevitable will happen. Thanks for that. Go on, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, and I think they use that as an excuse
for
trail hunting in order to actually catch a real fox.
Perhaps. Thanks, Nikki. More of your thoughts on this to come. I'm going to check in with our US correspondent as well. I'm going to take a break for the news, after which, have you blocked someone on social media? Have you done, like, one of the Beckham kids and blocked your parents? 0345 6060 973. It's 12:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The government is saying nothing is off the table following reports it's considering an Australian-style ban on social media for under-16s. The Department for Science, Innovation and Technology has been telling LBC it's closely monitoring Canberra's approach. The authorities in Venezuela have warned they will take what are being called all corresponding actions following the targeting of vessels near its waters by the United States. It has seized two ships and is currently chasing an oil tanker. And collars for pets, which give off electrical shocks, could be banned as part of a new government strategy targeting animal welfare. It's due to be announced later on today and includes a ban on trail hunting. LBC weather, cloudy and mild for much of the country overnight, but wet in northern and western areas. We'll see a low of around 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
The big day is almost here, and you know what that means. Turkey. Well, not just turkey. M&S British free-range turkey crown with a pork, cherry and chestnut stuffing glazed with maple syrup infused with chilli, cinnamon, clove and nutmeg. It also means Cornish cruncher cauliflower cheese with Emmental pecorino and mozzarella. And British baby parsnips with maple syrup glaze with polenta and pecorino. This is not just food. This is M&S Christmas food. Selected stores.
Have you known?
noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Another chapter in the endless starry soap opera that is the Beckham family has unfolded. David and Victoria have apparently been left heartbroken after their son Brooklyn blocked them on Instagram in what friends describe as a sign of complete estrangement. The couple insists they would never have unfollowed their eldest child and believe he has cut their final connection to him on social media. Let's talk about this with Will Guyatt, who is LBC's technology correspondent. Hello, Will.
I'm lost for words, Nick.
Is it because you're so very upset?
Well, what is good about this is it shows us just how crazy the world has got. Because there's a whole etiquette that exists around this sort of stuff. And there are grown people on social media urging people to unfollow people or block people that they do not like, as if it's some kind of act of damnation. And I don't know where it's come from, but it exists.
It does seem to be more aggressive than just ignoring somebody, though, or not replying to their letters or returning their phone call. It seems to be a more public demonstration of your dissatisfaction or displeasure with the person that you're blocking.
Yeah, I'm a bigger fan personally of muting people. That's called the connoisseur's block, as far as I'm concerned, because people don't know that you've muted them. And of course, I'd never do that to LBC listeners on social media, but that's a kind of a far easier way of getting noise or people's posts out of your life without making such a ridiculous statement, because it quite clearly says that you are blocked if somebody goes and tries. So if, let's say, for example, David Beckham sat there now, wherever he is in the world, and he tries to look at Brooklyn's Instagram, he'll get a notification saying you are blocked from viewing this page. So it sounds like a pretty, like you said, a pretty major step in a family fallout.
Yeah, it's is that the case with all social media sites? If you block somebody, they know that you've done it, or do they only know that you've blocked them when you try to contact them? Do people get some sort of message to say, without you instigating contact, that you have been blocked by this person?
You don't know. You don't get a message, but sometimes you randomly find out. Like I discovered the other day that Piers Morgan has blocked me on X, and that upset me for days on end, I must confess. The one thing that is really interesting about this, like I said, there's a whole kind of etiquette or thing around this. And there's people on social media who've got in their biogs, I'm blocked by X, Y, Z, you know, celebrities, politicians, whoever. Like it's some sort of badge of honour. Because it is the ultimate way of proving you're disgruntled or fed up with somebody, I guess. If you're in a world of social media, you know, oh, I can't deal with that person anymore. I'll show them. I'll give them the block.
Yes, but blocking, people wear it as a sort of badge of honour, depending on who it is that's done the blocking. But if you just stop responding to somebody, wouldn't that actually make them more furious than giving them the pleasure of knowing that you've made them irate to such an extent that they have to go through that blocking procedure?
Yeah, it reminds me of a story of a former LBC presenter who often asked me why I've not replied to their message on social media, because I may have had them muted. But this sort of stuff happens all the time, and you are entirely right. Just ignoring it is sometimes the best thing to do. But blocking exists not for Brooklyn Beckham to show his mum and dad that he's really cheesed off with them, but he'll still have the money. It kind of exists for more of a protective purpose if, let's say, for example, somebody is harassing you or giving you a hard time. So these things exist for a reason, but they've kind of been abused or appropriated or switched round into, you know, being the ultimate diss.
And right, so my next question was going to be, is there any way that you can get in touch with somebody who has blocked you to ask them why, or, you know, can you perhaps unblock me? I've amended my my evil ways, whatever it is that I that made you upset. I promise not to do that again. There isn't, is there? But for the very good reason that you just explained, that it was initially to protect people from harassment.
Yeah, and maybe I could use this as a public appeal to Piers Morgan. If you're listening, please unblock me. But no, you can. There are ways you can message people, and people do contact people through other services. But like you say, it has been created for the purposes of stopping people to harass people or tricky family situations or those kind of things. But there are... For a while, it was a really popular thing in the early days of Twitter. You could actually go to a page and find out who has blocked you just by searching, and it would reply with a result and tell you how many, you know, Twitter accounts have blocked you. But for this to be headline news at this time in the world, when there's so much other stuff going on, it just shows you how sort of everyday life and how modern sort of conversation, people understand what this means. It's sort of so common now that people block each other and, you know, families fall out, and it all happens in the public eye.
Yes, I suppose that now we put such store and spend such a lot of time sort of curating our connectivity, being blocked on the very thing that is the centre of your social life hurts much more than it used to.
Yeah, it does. And what's even more bonkers, and obviously not for the Beckham family, because people are obviously tracking this all the time, is that somebody has noticed that Brooklyn has stopped following the family and stopped following them all at once. So they automatically assume that they've been blocked. But yeah, so there is kind of serious capital in gossip columnists on all of the newspapers following who follows who on social media. And, you know, when somebody suddenly unfollows somebody else, one of the big stories in the middle of last year was Elon Musk suddenly stopped following one of the mothers of his 15 children. And then there was a big kickoff around the fact that she went public on social media that something had gone wrong. But the first thing that happened there was him not following her on social media anymore.
Yeah, I guess it's ironic that blocking is more common these days and is fueled by perhaps an inability to deal with emotions or differences caused by our addiction to the very thing that people are using to block each other with.
Yeah, I think you're entirely right. And you know, it's one of those things where I have seen young people be absolutely mortified when kids at school or other people in their lives have blocked them, and they get really emotionally, you know, this can emotionally affect people. And I know that some people will be listening to that and saying, oh, you know, this country's too woke or whatever. But it does upset people, and it can affect and impact people in its own kind of way. But it's a whole, you know, modern parlance. The fact that we're talking about this in 2025 on LBC, if we tried this 20 odd years ago, people would think you and I had gone mad.
Yes, they would, and with justification. More broadly, is there a move towards blocking social media entirely and just enjoying the peace, going back to how it used to be, not very long ago, when we didn't have this like soup, this particularly on X, it's become a kind of a cesspit of right-wingers screaming at each other how unfair everything is, and they're not allowed to express themselves anymore while they're expressing themselves.
Yeah, that's where I've got the most people blocked, actually, is on X, or muted on that platform. But you are entirely right, and I think the Children's Commissioner, Rachel D'Souza, has come out and said, this Christmas, spend more time away from your devices. And part of me feels like that's really good advice, but part of me also feels really sad that you have to have somebody in government or an authority to tell you not to use your phone as much. We're in a strange place as a society where we've got these really powerful devices, 75,000 times more powerful than took humans to the moon, but we don't really know how to responsibly use them. And, you know, the Beckham block scenario is just one of the kind of manifestations of that.
Yes, it's as though we're sort of in our infancy with this technology. Do you think that in 50 years' time, people will look back at this era and think how ludicrous it was that we spent so much time on social media saying things that didn't need to be said for people to people that we don't know, for likes and thumbs ups from complete strangers? Or do you think there will be actually the reverse will happen and we'll look at our entire lives through this stuff?
I think it could go one of two ways, and it will be the what the hell were we doing, or we'll be all, you know, we'll be, our credit limits will be decided by the number of likes we get on social media or something ridiculous like that. But I look at Australia and the social media ban that's currently going ahead in Australia for under 16s and think that in 5 years' time, we're either going to go, what a stupid, populist, short-sighted, idiotic decision, or, oh my God, the Australians were visionaries and look at what's happened to a whole generation of young people. And I could not tell you which way it's going to go. I really don't know.
Well, fingers crossed it's the latter. Good to talk to you, yeah. Will, as always. Thanks for that. Will Guyatt, LBC's technology correspondent. Right, now let's get back to the conversation that we were having about... we were sidetracked somewhat about the inheritance tax faced by farmers, which I think is a bit of a cul-de-sac. But the reason that we were talking about that is because the government is set to ban trail hunting for fear that it is being used as a smokescreen for chasing and killing wild animals. And the correspondent that I was talking to, Mo Metcalf-Fisher, he's from the Countryside Alliance. His determination was that we didn't really care about that. This is an issue that people do not care about. And I wondered if that's true. Plumstead, hello, Lynn.
Hello there.
Lynn.
Hi there. I think that people do care massively about wild animals. And myself, I campaigned for decades to abolish fox hunting and hare coursing and also stag hunting. Trail hunting, it is indeed a smokescreen. Any of your listeners could go on to, say, the Hunt Saboteurs Association websites or the League Against Cruel Sports websites to see exactly, you know, what goes on. It is just the same as it was pre-2004 when the ban came in to stop fox hunting, where foxes are thrown to the dogs, where foxes are dug out once they go to ground. It's certainly true that your previous, the woman from Wales, I think it was, called and talked about cub hunting, where in August it is, where dogs are given a taste of what they're going to hunt, where they're set loose into the countryside, into the woods, where young cubs are, young foxes, and so they're given a taste of what they're going to hunt in the future. And also, I would agree with you, Nick, wholeheartedly, that what is, you know, well, I think it's something like 18,000 foxes are killed every year in fox hunts, compared to, say, a billion chickens who are slaughtered mercilessly. The difference is that I'm vegan, by the way. I've been vegetarian all my life, vegan, whatever. Never mind about that.
The difference, perhaps, is one is for fun, essentially, and the other, exactly. And the other is for sustenance. Yeah, I'm going to have to leave it there, Lynn. It's a bit of a bad line, but thanks for that. Cork, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Nick. First of all, you have a great show. That's number one.
Thank you.
Number two is, I am against fox hunting. And number three is trail hunting. As far as I am aware, and I am not an expert in it, first of all, we have fox hunting in Ireland. We also have trail hunting. So they exist side by side.
Really?
Trail hunting is a particular sport where the dogs follow a particular scent.
Yes.
The people who organize their dogs get prizes because their dogs follow the scent. If the dogs don't follow the scent and they follow a fox, they don't get any points and their dogs are considered not that good. Whereas the dogs who do follow scent get points and their dogs then go up and probably go up in value. if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do, but this is news to me. I didn't realise that it was such an organised sport. I just thought it was a fun day out.
No. It's a particular sport, and it's a particular way of having dogs to follow a particular scent.
Right.
And for the most part, I understand that the people who organise, this might sound condescending, but it is not. As I understand, people who have dogs that follow a trail scent are people who can't afford to own horses, if you know what I mean, or don't want to own horses. They do it for the sport of the dogs, and the dogs are trained to follow a particular scent.
But how do they follow the hounds if they're not on horseback?
Oh, that's very easy. I used to live, and they used to do trail hunting. And what they do is they get up into a higher ground, so that the scent goes along a valley. Let's say,
right.
This might be exaggerating, and they're watchers who watch referees or whatever, right?
Hmm.
Are on a higher ground,
right.
And they can see point to point. They would have people looking
right.
at that,
so
and they follow them.
Right, so it's not following on horseback. They can see the lay of the land, and from their vantage point, they can see the event unfold. I got it. Okay, I'm going to have to leave it there, Dennis, because I've just run out of time. I do want to get in our US correspondent, John Christopher Buer, the White House correspondent for Real Political News, will join us after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
Alcohol consumption's fallen to a record low in Britain, but have you knocked booze on the head? And has it ever been a problem for you? And as shoplifting reaches a record high, why on earth don't the police take theft more seriously?
Richard Spur at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Aldi's Christmas Super 6 fruit and veg. Top of the tree for freshness, quality and price. At just 5p each, white potatoes, carrots, parsnips, Brussels sprouts, cabbage and swede, all British. In store this week. Aldi, multiple fruit and veg retailer 2025 at the FPC Fresh Awards. Products and prices may vary, subject to availability.
Only 3 days to go until the big day. But you're still running around stores looking for that blouse Mum has at the top of her wish list. There's no such thing as the perfect Christmas, but there are perfect moments. This year, make the most of moments that matter with Coca-Cola. Whether you're trying to track down the perfect gift or chatting with your colleagues about this year's Christmas party, refresh your holiday spirit with Coca-Cola, the perfect drink for sharing in the moment. Coca-Cola, holidays are coming.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Stuff Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadapilla, Rowing Boats, Aldous Blaze, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Oh, hey, last minute gifters. At TK Maxx, you can shop fashionably late with big brand gifts arriving right up to Christmas Eve. There's loads in store. So if you're shopping for your bestie, gran or pooch, there's still time to spoil all your loved ones for less. Big gifts, small prices, in-store, online and on the TK Maxx app now.
Leading Britain's conversation, Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
John Christopher Buer is the White House correspondent for Real Political News and joins us on the line now. Hello, John.
Hello, Nick. How are you, my good man?
I am very, very well, thank you. Long time no speak. It's been quite a week. A full and frank, unredacted release of all of the Jeffrey Epstein files. Nothing more to see. Move along, please.
Yeah, except that's not true. There's lots of blank spaces there and lots of pictures of Trump taken off, put back on, taken off. You know, since we last spoke, so much has been happening here. And, you know, we had those school shootings at MIT and Brown. We had Rob Reiner's tragic murder by his son and his wife. And Donald Trump is avoiding any kind of controversy by getting out his brand and talking about how he's going to save the world, and he's the only one who can keep us from ourselves.
His performances are getting a bit labored, aren't they?
Yes, they are indeed. They're getting labored, and they're getting, frankly, as an American and as someone who is involved in politics in Washington, it's a bit frightening to watch the way he's out there. And the people behind him, his MAGA followers, they're really not cheering him on. He doesn't look like Churchill or JFK. We'll get to that in a minute. But, I mean, they are saying, what is he talking about? He's talking about folding his wife's negligee in a drawer and kind of lurid things that we shouldn't be hearing. But, you know, he knows plenty about luridity. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Now, the release of the files themselves, if it was intended to pique the public's interest in them, then they've done an excellent job. One of the files was 191 pages of complete black ink. I'm surprised they didn't run out of it.
Well, you know, this is going on with the Justice Department, and the Congress is not pushing the Justice Department strong enough. They're not holding up to them. They're not saying enough is enough. Let's go, or we'll send the U.S. Marshals down there, and we'll show you a thing or two. But they don't have the whatever it takes to do that. And we've gone through an agonizing weekend, and they're young girls. Now they're in the mid-30s, and these young ladies who were children and brought to that island, which I've seen from the Virgin Islands, far away, as my wife and I used to sail by there, always wondered, what the heck is going on at this place? Well, now we know what was going on at this place. And young girls were taken down to this island and abused and raped and lives ruined. And there's that issue. And then, you know, I mean, we could talk, you and I could talk all night. But the thing, we have him changing the name of the
Kennedy Memorial Center. Yeah,
but before he did that, he destroyed the Grand Ballroom. And I'm at the White House most days. He destroyed the Grand Ballroom. He's going to build the Trump Triumphal Arch. And he's like the Arc of Triumph, the Arc of Trump, not even Triumph, the Arc of Trump. And this is by Arlington National Cemetery, no less. And he's renamed the Peace Institute for himself. And what he's done, the most unthinkable thing that he's done, and I'm a guy who's been around, who's met John F. Kennedy and was a young lad working on his campaign as a volunteer. He changed the name of the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, and he slapped his name on it, the Donald J. Trump and John F. Kennedy Center. Now it's Kennedy's daughter, Robert Kennedy's daughter, says she's going to go there with a hammer and a crowbar and pull Trump's name off there.
That's right.
What's going on in Washington, Nick. You should come over. It's a lot of fun.
No thanks. I've said too many uncomplimentary things about him on social media, so I'm going to swerve that country for a good long while.
He brought it on himself, mate.
Now, as a way to distract us from all of the above, well the Kennedy thing, I think, was part of the distraction, distraction technique, is starting a war with Venezuela. What on earth is that about?
Well, this is about, you know, if he thinks he can do it, he'll try it. Anything is a distraction. He thinks that, you know, since Venezuela nationalized their oil industry back in the 70s, he figures it's our oil. So now he's got, the latest is that a foreign ambassador or whatever from Iran has contacted his counterpart in Venezuela, and he's saying, if you want ships to run sideline with you to stop the Americans we can accuse the Americans of pirateering, and we'll stop it. So now we're going to have Iran against the U.S. and Venezuela. And this is a president who didn't want to get into any
foreign wars.
Yes, exactly.
What's odd is that Russia and China are allies of Venezuela, and there's been nothing from either of them.
Well, Putin knows how to be quiet, and I think Xi knows how to be quiet. They'll let Trump just twist himself slowly in the wind. And I think that's what's going to happen. And he's having a lot of problems, and he's getting very desperate. And to tell you the truth, I'm not a big fan of him. I've known him for 60 years. He hasn't changed His entire thing is about branding. If he puts his name on something, he figures people will fall in line. Now, he put his name on so many buildings in New York, and they all told him to take his damn name off these buildings. He doesn't own anything. Yes. He hasn't built anything. He and his father destroyed Coney Island and built them slums, and now he's been bankrupt six times and everything else. But, you know, it's time for the Congress to do it, and it's time for the American voter to stand up. And I think I'm afraid that our allies, our dear allies like Great Britain and France and Italy and Germany, are going to be very upset with us and not trust us. It's all about trust, Nick. It's about trust.
Yeah, I think that ship has sailed. I don't think that the security services in Europe actually trust that any information they give to America will stay there. So,
I wish I could change it around.
Yeah, unfortunately not. No, and the reason why Trump says that he's going into Venezuela is apart from the oil, and of course Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world. Yeah, And the oil that they have is of a type that the U.S. refineries need. But he says that the reason that is putatively because Venezuela is trafficking drugs to the U.S. But they absolutely are not. The cocaine that may come out of Venezuela is going in this direction towards us here in Europe.
Exactly. Exactly. It's going to Guyana, I believe, and then over to Great Britain, up the Atlantic coast. But the fact is, I think that's right, the fact is that he is trying to persuade the Americans that this is dangerous. They are terrorists sending cocaine, and they're killing every boatload of cocaine, kills 50 million Americans. I mean, he's way off on his calculations. And then they went and blew up these boats with sailed poor guys on them,
yes,
you know, transporting the stuff. And they annihilated them, and there was no follow up. They didn't have a interdiction notice. They didn't inform Congress. They didn't inform. They just, this guy Hegseth, who is now the Secretary of War. He changed the department, which you can't do, by the way. And I wish someone would tell him to get his American flag out of his pocket. It's not a pocket. It's not a pocket square.
No.
It's the American flag, and that's wrong.
Yeah. It's added to the giant mountain of wrong that is happening over there. John, I'm sadly out of time, but thanks so much for that. That's John Christopher Buer, the White House correspondent for Real Political News. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player or the new LBC app, both of which are free from your app store. You can get them from your app store now, the LBC app and the Global Player app. I'll be back at 10 o'clock on Wednesday night for the start of the A to Z of 2024. Go from Christmas Eve through to and including New Year's Eve. So I hope you can and you can join me for some of that. Coming up before, it's Ian Payne. But first, here's Richard Spur.
Good morning. Still to come, the drinking of alcohol in the UK has dropped significantly in the last 2 years, with a typical adult now consuming just 10 drinks a week. I'll be asking if you've cut down for some reason and whether alcohol has ever been an issue in your life. But first, shoplifters are now getting away with stealing from a shop nearly every minute of the day. More than 800 offences a day go unsolved or uninvestigated. That's a cost to retailers, big and small, of nearly £2 billion a year. The Lib Dems are calling for a mass CCTV rollout in corner shops funded by the government. But do you believe that would solve the problem? And if not, what do you think would? And you agree with me that it's a dereliction of duty that the police don't seem to treat theft as a crime anymore.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The government has told LBC it's closely monitoring Canberra's approach following reports it's considering an Australian-style ban on social media for under-16s. The Department for Science, Innovation and Technology has been responding to newspaper reports. They claim the Prime Minister and the Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, are having discussions. Earlier this month, the former technology entrepreneur, Jess Butcher, told LBC young minds need to be protected.
If, as adults,
we are struggling with this in the way that we so evidently are, just think about what that is doing to children's brains, and for whom reading is falling off a cliff, and for whom boredom is actually extinct now in childhood. And yet it is so important, because it's in those moments that they learn how to be creative, yeah, where they learn resilience, where they learn play.
The Health Secretary is being accused of making a bid for the Labour leadership instead of focusing on the NHS. The comments have come from a government source after Wes Streeting appeared to hint Britain should join a customs union with the EU. The Prime Minister has already ruled out changing the government's policy on the issue. It's being claimed reports of suspected illegal fox hunting have increased across the board. The League Against Cruel Sports has been releasing figures ahead of a government announcement on the banning of trail hunting.